Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
C'est un rêve en moi, si vrai, si fort. All the world in union.
Rugby! Hey, do you like rugby, young boy?
You know what? I've been trying to convince myself that I should like rugby for a long time.
Young boy, do you like rugby?
I was just speaking. Why would you interrupt me?
Young boy, do you like rugby?
I'm trying to like it by watching every game of the World Cup ever is what I was trying to explain.
Right.
So I watched all of the 2011 games in that Rugby World Cup, having never watched rugby before that.
Yes, you are a very young boy.
I'm a very young boy. One day I will be old, but right now I am very young.
You're very young.
Unless I age backwards,
you're
but that might not
happen.
You're
quite spectacularly young.
I'm very young. Like, we'll come on to how young in a bit. But then I watched the 1987 Rugby World Cup, which I didn't watch live because I'm very young.
You're basically toddling.
I'm young.
Yes.
And then we're watching the 2007 Rugby World Cup, which I also didn't watch live because I'm very young.
You are extraordinarily young.
Yeah.
And I'd like to congratulate you on that. You've done a really excellent job being so young.
Thank you. Yeah, Suede once wrote a song called So Young about me.
They named an England scrum half after you.
Yes. Yeah, and a Cardiff head coach after me.
Yes.
But not the first
John Mulvihill. Yes.
Yeah.
And Jack Van Porfleet. They named them both after you.
They did. They're both named after me because I'm so young.
Yes. You are, and you're often driving a van through Portfleet on your way over the Mulvihill.
I also just realised when you made that joke a minute ago, the scrum half who came to mind was not Ben Youngs, but in fact Mickey Young.
Same guy.
Just thinking, oh yeah, scrum half called Young. Yes, Mickey Young.
Yeah. Like, vintage player who would be a Saxon nowadays.
Yeah.
We are missing the England Saxons because there's so many You're So Club players that could be England Saxons.
I know.
We're just missing out.
Who would be on your team sheet for England Saxons? Perry Humphreys is
Dave
straight
Ewers
on there for me.
Would be like
Dave
a
Ewers.
Legend of the You're So Club.
Yeah,
like, the Saxons sending off.
Yeah. There's a lot of them. But yeah, it's a real shame that Dave Ewers is now making himself ineligible for when they inevitably bring it back next year.
Yeah, it's really, really disappointing, I think. This is the thing, like, Ollie Hassel-Collins should have had to establish himself on the Saxon scene before making the step up, like Mike Brown did before him, and like so many other back three options.
Oh, I wouldn't remember them, because I'm so young.
You're so young, and I'd like to welcome those of you who are not so young, and those of you who are, to the Squid Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the rugby podcast that is, as the young boy with me so accurately described, going over every Rugby World Cup match ever played for some goddamn
all
reason.
All of them, including Ireland versus Namibia from 2007. That's included.
Now, we'll get onto this. Who are you first?
I think when I grow up, I'm going to be Will Owen.
And who are you second?
That's a good one. That was a high five.
That was a terrible high five.
That's on you.
That was Rob Howley-esque.
Yeah,
high five.
That was pretty bad. I was Sean Edwards in that situation. You were Rob Howley.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Pretty poor. Pretty poor. Who am I second? Well, I've said that. When I grow up, I will be Will Owen. That's who I'll be second.
And I'm Squidge or Rob, whatever you want to call me.
Yeah. You've alternated this time.
Sometimes I get it wrong.
The old switcheroo.
And today we are joined by no guest.
Oh, we've just baited the listener there. Look, when you said today we're joined by, they went, hang on a second, let me pause this, let me guess.
Who's
I can't
this,
guess.
This
then pulled it out of their pocket.
Quiet no guest. Very quiet guest as we do shtick. And today we are here for the most exciting reason anyone has ever been anywhere, which is to talk about Ireland's 32-17 win over Namibia in the 2007 Rugby World Cup.
I love plot twists.
Here's
the
thing.
That's why we're here.
It's one of those games that you see the score and you go, oh God.
Yeah.
And then actually when I was watching it, I was like, actually, this is one of the most Squid Rugby World Cup retrospective games I've ever watched.
Yeah, it certainly is. Like, I watched the first half of this game thinking like, well, yeah, it's this game, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's this game that happens in a World Cup all the time. And you realize quite often it happens when you do a podcast where you talk about every single fucking game ever to have happened. When you've all listened to, well, some of you will have listened to a lot of episodes where it's a tier one nation playing against a less developed rugby nation and putting a lot of points on them.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about the tries that happened from that team. And I was like, oh, okay, it's this game. But actually, you get the second half, there's a little bit more to it, which is exciting.
New Ireland won this by, you know, they scored 30-odd points. I knew it wasn't a massive battering, but I figured it was going to be them from the way the first half goes. They score quite a lot in the first half. Then in the second half, they're off the money. And it's kind of them knocking it on the try line type deal. That's what I was expecting. But to say, it becomes far more plot twisty and exciting as it goes on.
Yeah.
I think this is, in terms of discoveries of games, this is one I really wish I could have watched live. This would have been an amazing game to watch live, I think.
Yes.
Like, it's got massive, massive, like, the energy. There's a few games we talked about in this podcast. Some including Namibia themselves, but often including other tier two nations who really gave them a game. Like, when we get to France, USA from the last World Cup, right? And there's a lot of people listening who've probably forgotten that game already. Mm. A lot of people listening or that watched that game at the time probably went, whatever. But there was a or forgotten about it. You kind of remember France won it in the end. They got the bonus point. But there was a moment. There was a moment around 50-odd minutes where it looked like the comeback might be on.
It
looked like the USA might be about to do it. And McGinty kicks a penalty and France a player down. And you're like, hold on, this is happening. This could be happening. This is like, they could really push them here. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
But there's that thrill of watching it live that this game could have had if we'd been going in having no idea what the score was.
Like, it makes you wonder, when we eventually cover 2019, that Australia-Georgia game, for example, will we look at that and go like, oh, that's quite a shit game, actually, because not a lot happens in it? Whereas actually, you think about if you watch this live, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think there was one thing that, we'll obviously talk about this later on, but like, in the commentary, I wished that they talked about the Namibian players and what they were doing well to frustrate Ireland a little bit more. Because I think there's several ways to watch a Rugby World Cup. And I think the one that we've always adopted, and this is no better or worse than any other way to consume the Rugby World Cup, because if you love rugby, you love rugby. That's all that matters.
Sure, yeah.
But the way that we've always chosen to consume a World Cup is we will focus on every single player from every single team and like obsess over them and everything that they do.
Every team has fought and scrapped as hard as they can to get there, right? Even if it's a country like New Zealand or like Ireland in this case, who've never really had to go through qualifying, right? Those players have had to scrap incredibly hard their entire lives to get into this team to compete at a World Cup.
Yeah.
Whereas Namibia have had to do that and then do it as a team in order to reach it. And we'll get into the qualifying campaigns later. But it's, yeah, it's huge for them. And this is the pinnacle of rugby, you know?
Yeah.
And Murray Mexted says on commentary, he says a lot of really stupid things.
Yeah.
One thing he does say is for Namibia, this is their World Cup final.
Mm.
And that is it. Like, this is the biggest occasion they'll ever have. And there's a point in this game where they are only 10 points behind. And it's just deep into the second half, and Ireland are making errors in their own half.
Yeah.
And suddenly you start to go, if you're a Namibian, you're going, hold, this is it. Mm. This is our big day. This is the day we've dreamt of and worked for our entire lives.
We said the same thing about Wales last week, so I'm not just saying this is the Squidge brand hates Ireland thing. But like, there is something great at a World Cup about seeing the tier one nation in that point panic.
Yes.
As seeing Wales against Canada, it was great to see that.
Yeah.
Because Canada had done such a great job of forcing Wales into a position where they were the worst team on the field.
Yeah.
For maybe a 20 minute stretch. Well, it's more than that for the Wales one. For Ireland here, it's maybe a 10 minute stretch we're talking about, where Namibia are all over them. And I love those moments of World Cups.
Yeah. Exactly. A lot of the draw for the World Cup is games like this.
Yeah.
Like, this to me is as exciting as the knockouts when it gets really tight. Like, it's the tier two nation. It's the players knowing this is the biggest game they'll ever have. Really standing up and
putting themselves on the map, isn't it?
Yeah. And you get players that like lose a semi-final or whatever in the World Cup, then go on and win a Heineken Cup or something.
Lots of Irish players have lost quarterfinals.
Well, exactly. And so many of those Irish players that, you know, get knocked out in the pools, spoilers, here in this World Cup, go on to either win a Heineken Cup with Munster the following year or with Leinster a couple of years later. Or they go on to get battered in a final for Ulster a couple of years after that.
Yeah, a couple of them won Lions Tours series in Australia.
A lot of these tier one players get other highlights for their career.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're a Namibian, other than Jacques Berger in this team, right, none of this team go on to have, like, glittering club careers. So some of them, like Hugo Horn, goes on to play for Namibia for a long time, Eugene Yankees, etc. There's quite a few of those, and there's a few, like Jacques Nienhuyzen and Like
Nico Westerhaeser.
Nico Westerhaeser. Yeah, there's a few of them that go on to play like professional rugby in France or England.
Yeah.
Or a lot of them in South Africa as well. Johnny Redlin Hayes, you know. Mm. Johannes Meyer, again, on the bench, goes on to play, I think, at Quinns. There's quite a few players in the Namibian team that go on to play professional rugby. But other than Jacques Burger, none of them have kind of really glittering careers. Like, Jacques Burger goes on to win a European Cup a couple of times. Grand.
That's it,
'cause the rest of the Namibia team, like, this World Cup and either the World Cup before or after, were their career. And it's like, that's the thing that defines them. And that's the thing I've been really excited about games like this.
Mm.
Like, this is the game they'll look back on. This is the game that'll come up on TV when, you know, on the Namibian coverage, when they're going, remember when we played Tier 1 Nation and we really pushed Ireland? Remember when we almost beat Fiji? Remember when we scored this try against the All Blacks?
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, you name drop Jacques Burger there because he is it's not a controversial statement to say, he's the greatest Namibian rugby player of all time.
Yeah.
That's not a controversial thing to say. What I didn't realise is this World Cup is before he'd really
himself. This was like the really weird thing. I had a weird moment watching this, and I almost said this to you because I was watching in the office.
Yeah.
But it's so weird to think this was before we knew Jacques Burger as the great, as the great Namibian warrior. No one knew who he was. This was quite a young Jacques Burger.
And that's the thing though, you're talking about this being the pinnacle of all of these players' careers. For Jacques Burger it was.
Yeah.
Like, if he didn't work his bloody arse off in this game as he did, he was fantastic in this game. If he wasn't, he might never have been picked up by Saracens. He probably wouldn't have. If he wasn't great in not only this game, but the other World Cup games that he will have had in this campaign. For Jacques Burger, this is make or break between him being an average like Currie Cup level player and being a European champion of multiple trophies.
He gets picked up by the Bulls off the back of this game.
Right.
So he played a season for Aureliac in the Pro Liga and then went back to the Bulls in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he signed for Saracens. I remember the BBC headline being they sign, like, flanker Burger signs from South African club. Like, as they were selling it as though it was Schalkberger that signed.
And funnily enough, that aged finally instead.
Yeah.
Because Schalkberger did eventually sign for them. But yes, I now remember that. That makes sense. So they say in the comms that the only professional player that they currently have, or fully top level player they have, is their captain, Kees Lensing, who's played a little bit in France. They said he played for Leeds, Carnegie, he played for Castra, and then he ended up at the Sharks.
Who they call Keith every time.
Why Keith?
They say Keith Lensing instead of...
Got a lisp.
Yeah, I don't know. It just comes up as Keith. And I thought he was... I was like, that's funny. A Namibian called Keith.
Yeah, yeah.
Turns out, no.
But they say a couple of times in the commentary that the Namibian head coach, Hakkies Hosselman, which is, first and foremost, a
hell of a name,
that he had said in interviews, I'm really grateful because for the first time we've been able to have this squad together full time for about 2 months. But then he later on went on to reveal that by full time, he meant between 6 and 8 in the morning.
Right.
Between 12 and 1 in the afternoon when they're all on their lunch break from work, and then from, I think, 6 till 8 in the evening.
Wow.
So they had to work around a full working schedule, including running on their lunch hour, which is horrible. I remember hearing about Prince Klausep, the current Namibian flanker, who is a really, really good player that, you know, has played a bit of MLR and so on, as well as playing internationally and went to the last World Cup, that he works as a banker.
Yeah.
And he had to do that. He had to fit those into his schedule.
He had agreements with his work that they would let him come in an hour late and finish an hour early.
Yes.
Because he was a professional player.
Representing the country.
Yeah. So they went, brilliant, we'll give you 2 hours off work in order to represent our rugby.
However, the whole squad being on that schedule is next
that's
level.
That's a killer. With, as you say, a handful of exceptions. So Lensing, as I said, the loose head and captain, who had been at Yorkshire Carnegie, Leeds Carnegie at the time.
Yeah.
And then, he signed a contract just before this World Cup with London Irish. Brian Smith, then coach of London Irish. And I don't know if he was like spotted having dinner with Eddie Jones or something, because quite suddenly Brian Smith ended his contract. And I think it was a change in like coaching and management and like...
Because Saracens outbid him.
Yeah. They had a change in like something at London Irish and suddenly they didn't want him anymore. So that contract got cancelled last second. So he went to the Sharks instead. But after the end of this World Cup, he got an offer from Castle and Peak to go and play there.
Okay.
So he went to Castle after this World Cup, played in the top 14 for quite a while. Continued playing for Namibia through to qualifying for the next World Cup, then retired just before that World Cup.
Okay.
Age like 33.
Yeah. He was quite good.
He had a solid career. I thought.
I wasn't familiar with him. I can't say I've seen him play before.
He makes a half break at one point. It's joyous.
Yes. But he's clearly a good leader. Like, he clearly knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
You can tell he's been around the block. I've got time for him.
Yeah. Well, so they've been it was a really interesting, weird period for Namibia.
Okay.
Because they had, of course, qualified for the previous two World Cups.
Yeah.
They qualified for 99, they qualified for 2003. 2003, they'd had the infamous game against Australia where they lost 142-0.
Of course.
And that was really badly seen.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think if that happened, people would go, oof, I really feel for Namibia.
Yeah.
Whereas then it was, we should kick these teams out of the tournament. Yeah. We need to reduce the World Cup. We need to reduce the appeal of rugby.
It is concerning when it gets to that high, the scoreline. Yeah. Because at this point as well, when it's less structured and so on, especially in 2003, you can't help but wonder if there's a safety concern of
it
being that one-sided and so on. So I get why people would make that, would have those concerns, you know. Yeah, you do feel for Namibia, though.
Yeah.
That would have been a record scoreline at the time in international rugby, let alone at a World Cup.
I think it still is. I think it still is the world record.
Yeah. I reckon there might be something rivaling it in this World Cup, but I'm not sure.
But so it, yeah, stands, obviously, enormous, enormous loss, and people are really concerned about, like, should this team be in the tournament and what have you, which I think is bollocks and I hate as a reductionist way of looking at rugby and looking at a World Cup. And the point is you appeal and reach out and expand the World Cup to 80 teams.
I don't think it's ever going to be that much of an issue again.
No,
it's
news. I don't. I think we're now at a stage in which we have enough teams banging on the door that you could expand it to 24 teams quite easily.
Yeah.
And you would still have, you still have some big results. Like if, you know, the current French team or whatever played against, I don't know, who'd be the, whoever's just us, depending if they do it geographically, like if they played against Kenya, they'd probably batter them by a really big scoreline.
Yeah.
But you probably,
I think it'll be more 90
rather
than 150. You know? Like we watched the other week that Australia Japan game from this World Cup. I think it'll be more similar to that than it would, like, them not being able to make tackles.
Yeah.
When you get to 150 points.
Yeah. So Namibia then came back after that World Cup. And I think there was an awful lot of kind of hurt pride and an awful lot kind of really thrown off within Namibian rugby, and their initial World Cup qualifying campaign did not get off to a good start.
Okay.
Well, no, actually, that's not true. So immediately afterwards, their first kind of qualifying game, they beat Kenya 82-12. And I
go
think
on, lads.
Part of that was a reaction to the, you know, like the shaming they'd had and the kind of, you know, being very self-conscious, I think. But then it goes off a cliff completely.
Oh.
Like there's about a month before they next play their next game, which is against Tunisia. And they lose it. They lose 24-7 to Tunisia.
Wow. That's not a good result.
No. No. And again, came completely out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a vintage Tunisian team. They'd lost to Kenya, that team.
Okay. So a huge drop-off from
from beating, you know, so Kenya beat Tunisia 25-21. Namibia had beaten Kenya 81-12.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Namibia lose to Tunisia. It's a huge, huge, like one of the all-time biggest upsets.
Yeah, that's a 90-point turnaround.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And then in the return game, Kenya beat Namibia.
Okay.
30-26.
Should we add this competition to the
queue?
We should
be doing this.
We should add it to the queue.
We should add this. Okay. So we're doing the African qualifying for 2007.
Yeah.
And the 1987 Premiership.
Yeah.
And all the Rugby League World Cups. Reese Witherspoon movies.
Yes, Rugby League. Thank you for coming. I love Rugby League.
I know you do. What else are we doing?
Oh, there's like something to do with Touch Rugby maybe.
Touch Rugby. We're going to do free games of Touch Rugby.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a good list.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
But then, thankfully, basically, Namibia go in knowing that their points difference in the one game they won for the final game against Tunisia, the final return game against Tunisia, they go in knowing their points difference is so strong that all they have to do is beat Tunisia in this return game and they'll make it through to the final round of qualifying where they play Morocco.
Okay.
Because Morocco win the other group.
This tournament sounds fucking mental.
I know. So the other game, the other group comes down, it's like Morocco and Ivory Coast look completely evenly matched. You know, like there's a really level game between them. They both beat Uganda by pretty big scores.
Okay.
And it all looks pretty
big up
even.
Sylvain Tian definitely would have scored for Ivory Coast at that point.
Yes, of course.
What a player.
And it all comes down to a game in Morocco between Morocco and the Ivory Coast for the winner then, you know, is in the final of the kind of qualifying.
Okay, yeah.
And the loser goes into the repêchage. And Morocco pull out a remarkable 23-7 win to beat the Ivory Coast. Of course, Morocco never qualified for a World Cup. This is the closest they ever get to a World Cup. They were one game away.
Oh, no way. Oh, I would love to see Morocco in this.
I know. Like, it was, they
imagine
were so
if
close.
We were covering Morocco versus Ireland at this point.
And it's like, it's one of these things that we will, you know, we'll forever talk about the Russian team from 2019 because they got in, you know, because of what happened and all of the kind of controversy that led to Romania being kicked out. And like, same...
The Ivory Coast team in 1995. You know? The fact that we've mentioned that is because it happened, because they got there.
But people forget, like, people miss the fact that we were, like, there were small margins that led to Morocco missing out on a World Cup.
It could, like, and like, that could have been the case that, I don't know this, but, like, hypothetically, Ivory Coast could have beaten somebody by 1 point to get into that World Cup in 95, right? Yeah. Like, if somebody missed a kick, that could have meant we were looking at Uganda in the Rugby World Cup or something instead. Like, you never know what's going to happen. Yeah. Like, you know, we're never going to see the 2023 USA team because Samuel Marks got that kick.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
and so, like, in May 2006, right, Namibia... In that first game of African qualifying, Namibia putting 82 points on Kenya. If they'd put 60 points on Kenya, which is still a huge margin, Tunisia would have played Morocco in the final for who would have got in.
No way. So Namibia just wouldn't have stood a chance.
It came in, like, they would have been knocked out if they scored only 60 points instead of 84.
That's
82.
A few people missing tackles in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's three tries.
Yeah.
If Namibia scored three fewer tries in the game where they battered them.
I was really rooting for Morocco as well.
But as it is, it leaves the final is between Namibia and Morocco. They play home and away.
Go on, Morocco.
Namibia.
Who wins?
Namibia wins the first leg 25-7. That's the home leg.
Go on, Morocco. So
but 25-7, the second leg.
Oh, that's an 18-point difference. Go on, Morocco.
18-point difference.
18-0 Morocco, I'm calling it.
Second leg in Casablanca itself,
on,
which
Morocco.
Is a great venue for a high-profile rugby match. Casablanca, here's
on,
looking
Morocco.
At you, Namibian national rugby team. Namibia pull it out the bag and win 27-8, despite some early pressure from Morocco.
I'm gutted for the lads. I'm gutted for the lads.
I know. But you feel like if it was the other way around, right?
I can't believe I've never seen the Morocco 2006 rugby team play, and yet I have such an attachment to them.
But here's the thing. Like, I reckon they would have beaten Tunisia. Based entirely on not having watched any of them, but looking at how up and down Tunisia's results are.
We have to actually watch all of these games.
Yeah.
The African qualifying for 2007 Rugby World Cup is,
like,
firmly on our list.
Morocco won all their home games up until that Namibia game. And that was a Namibia team who by that point could bring in Jacques Berger and could bring in, I suppose, you know, could
Can
bring
they
in
do
the
it
professional
on a
players.
Hot sunny afternoon in Morocco? That's the question.
So, man, like, in the end, Namibia won 52-15 on aggregate.
Oh.
And somehow scraped through into the World Cup. In the end, it was pretty comprehensive in that final game. But there was a world in which we almost had Tunisia against Morocco for the World Cup to play Ireland.
Like, to say at this stage, Ireland beat Namibia by 15 points.
Yeah.
That means Morocco were like 40 points off Ireland.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn good. I mean, I know it doesn't work. And let's be honest, if Morocco got in, they probably would have got fucking tonked.
Yeah,
right?
It would have been worse. So much worse.
Because who else would just pull France and Argentina?
Imagine Argentina against Morocco.
Imagine the Moroccans all there in their long shorts and so on and their long sleeves, them rocking up to Stade de France and getting absolutely battered in Paris. Would have been phenomenal.
I love the thought. No, in my head, because they play in Casablanca, their coach is Humphrey Bogart. And he's giving really inspirational team talks and a very Humphrey, like, wearing the hat, and he's standing on the touchline with his hands in his pockets at all times.
I'm so invested in Morocco. I'm gutted that they're not in this tournament. I'm in denial, is what I am. I'm in denial. We're going to... Look, if we end up making a game in this
Which
tournament...
Which we would never do.
But if we did it again in this tournament...
It should be Morocco.
Morocco should be in it. We'll see if anyone notices.
Yes, that's a great idea.
I don't think anyone would.
So yeah, so it leaves Namibia in quite an interesting place where I think they're delighted and they come good in the end in the qualifying, but it's a real up and down campaign. They start this tournament, they come into it as the lowest ranked nation in the 2007 World Cup and kind of given no chance of winning any of their games.
Yes.
I think considering they were lower ranked than Portugal at this point, who were very much outsiders.
Yes.
They were not in an ideal place. They played a number of warm-up games coming to this World Cup though once they qualified.
I know about one of these.
Yes.
So, on comms, they mentioned that they played against South Africa.
Yep.
And the final score of that game was 105-13.
Yes.
So, it's quite an interesting one, because that obviously goes on to be a really good South African team.
Yeah.
And the fact that Namibia managed to put 105 points on them is seriously impressive.
You joke, but there is a point in that game in which the score is 7-0 to Namibia.
Oh, go on, lads.
After 10 minutes...
Just saying... Morocco would have got 3-0 up.
I started watching that game back as preparation for this. And yeah, Namibia go ahead. Namibia score the first try. And it takes then an intercept try from Jean de Villiers to get the Springboks back into it. And it's like, basically, the game is 7-all at 20 minutes. And then Juwan Smith scores. And then from there on out, it's a one-way traffic. But there's 20 minutes of fight in there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I don't know what's more impressive, that or the fact that you started watching back the warm-ups to help aid this podcast. I think watching back the 48 games of the World Cup is enough, personally.
I didn't get all the way through it. I gave up after a while.
You stopped the count.
But yeah,
what you did.
Stopped the count, yeah. But like, South Africa somehow managed to score 2 tries in the 80th minute. That's how bullshit that was.
What?
They have 2 tries listed coming after the 80.
And oh, they had added time at this point sometimes, yeah, though, didn't they? Weird. Weird rules.
Weird one. Whoa. The other thing, right? Do you want to know something that's a big contributor to that scoreline, I think?
Go on.
The referee for that game was Jonathan Kaplan, who is not only just a Nazi, but South African.
I believe you brought this up on a previous episode, didn't you?
Maybe.
That's very strange. I feel like that's... Look, if it wasn't a South African refereeing that, I feel like Namibia definitely would have been within a chance.
I think they would have...
Probably won.
The game was level at 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it was 7-all at 20 minutes. And then you introduce a South African referee.
Kaplan goes, I'm going to rig this. And this is too close for my liking.
He is single-handedly responsible for 70-odd points.
That's a disgrace.
Being scored.
That's a disgrace.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. Bloody 88 points coming solely from the referee.
If I were Hackies Hustleman, I would have invented Twitter and gone on it saying about how bad the referee was.
Absolutely, absolutely. If I was commentating at the time, I would have done nothing but complain about the refereeing. I would have got really, really angry about it, said all of those 80 points the Springboks have just scored is purely down to the referee.
Yeah.
And I would have invited anyone on Twitter out for a fight that I could find in order to prove how hard I am.
Yeah, I think that would have been a solid gold strategy. And I don't know why neither you nor Hackies Hustleman thought of it at the time.
Yeah. Namibia did play some other warm-up games.
Mm-hmm.
So while they're in South Africa, they went, lads, let's make a little tour of this. Let's do something here. So directly before those games, they played the South African Amateur 15.
Okay.
Okay. And they won 42-34.
Oh, go on, fellas.
I have no idea how you pick the South African Amateur 15.
Yeah, that's a difficult one.
I suppose
isn't it?
It's like an England Counties team.
Yeah, it must be something similar to that. I wonder if any of those have gone on to either become professional or win caps for Namibia.
That'd be interesting. Then a week later, Namibia plays South Africa Universities.
Okay. They're really doing the full tour of these.
They are.
I love how they've gone like, yeah, we'll play the universities, we'll play the amateurs, we'll play their under-20s, you know, we'll play their women's team. We'll just fucking play the national team, why don't we? Just in case we lose to any of those lot, we might be able to beat the national team.
We'll see. You know, we can certainly give them a game for 20 minutes, providing their referee isn't biased.
Yeah. And only on the condition that the referee isn't biased.
So South Africa Universities had Michael Killian. I don't know if you remember him.
I remember him. He played for the Royal 15 against the Lions in 2009.
Yeah. He was a winger, played for the Lions in Super Rugby.
Yeah, he played
quite
with Frolic.
Time.
Remember Frolic?
Played with Frolic. He was a fly half and goal kicker at the time.
Okay.
Then moved up to be a winger when he got into the professional
ranks. I
remember
him being a winger, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm shocked at how much of this I remember. This is for anybody who's really gone deep on the lore of this podcast.
There's also, they had a winger, South Africa Universities, called Rowan Walters, right?
Okay.
Who might sound innocuous now, but they discovered there he was Namibian born. He got called up the next year.
There we go.
Useful game for many reasons.
Certainly, scouting.
Yeah. Namibia came through. They won 25-13 in the end, despite being 15-6 down at one point. So really showing their kind of like reserve. No, sorry, I got that wrong. They came back to be 25. Then South Africa won it in the last play with a 32.
Oh,
I tried to make it 32.
Another biased referee.
I know. I've got no idea who the referee was, but he was clearly biased.
Probably South African.
Definitely South African. Like, almost definitely genuinely
because
South African.
They're not going to fly anyone in from Australia for that, are they?
No. And so concluded Namibia's tour of South Africa.
Okay.
They beat a bunch of amateurs, but lost to the university
students. Soon as anyone knew what they were doing, it was just game over.
It's a hell of a step up, isn't it? From a bunch of amateurs, literal amateurs, to students, to the Springboks, to a World Cup winning Springbok team.
I think that's a real character defining tour that they've gone on there.
Yeah. Like, if you look at the list of try scorers in that South Africa Namibia game, right? Like, Jean de Villiers, Juwan Smith, JB Peterson, Schalkberger gets a hat trick. Like,
poor man Schalkberger.
Jacques Ferry, Oz Duran, Percy Montgomery. This is just the try scorers. Like, Ruan Pienaar comes off the bench, CJ van der Linde.
If you're the tight head and you see Oz Durant Bismarck in front of you, Duplessis, what the hell do you do in that situation? How do you prepare
cry.
For that? Cry. Cry, yeah. Literally, they've fielded their first team there.
Yeah.
They've not even gone like, oh yeah, we'll just rotate everyone out and develop some depth here. They've just gone like, nah, we'll just have essentially a training run.
And so, yeah, Namibia come into this tournament, I suppose, some pride bruised again, but glad to be there and knowing, actually, we gave South Africa a go for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And eventually we battered Morocco.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? There's some pride to be taken in that because Morocco are a dark horse in this World Cup.
Absolutely.
If I start telling people they're in this World Cup, they might start buying it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we could probably, like, change history and get them in.
Yeah.
Do you think we could get
at
them in for...
keep planting the seed, bro.
We could get them in for 2023. Like, the whole point of this podcast is we're drawing parallels, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if we start talking about how Morocco should have been in this World Cup and it was, like, the biggest mistake would have been made to not just let them in anyway.
Yeah.
Adding a 21st team in Morocco. Maybe they can add a 21st team to 2023.
Yeah.
And we can have Morocco
in. If nothing else, why not have three teams on the pitch? Why does it just have to be two? Have someone shoot the other way. Shoot horizontally. Go to the sideline. You know?
Yeah.
No one's marking the sideline. It would be if we had Morocco going that way.
Look, I was watching Toby Booth's press conference the other day for the Ospreys, and I've noticed something when he does these. Almost every time he'll refer to them as coming second rather than losing.
Okay, yeah.
Which I think is a lovely coaching point.
It is, yeah. He calls them work-ons, not fuck-ups. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, right, if we had a third place, that's more legitimate.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think
we have to come third in rugby. Yeah.
All right, we'll finalise this once we're finished recording, but we'll get Morocco in the 2020.
Morocco are currently ranked 48th.
Oh, that's the perfect number.
But they are up from 49th previously.
Lads, go on. Lads.
Thanks to beating Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, Trinidad and Tobago, they produced like the Armitage, isn't it?
Yeah, the Armitages are from there.
Yeah, there
we
go.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go. So there's rugby royalty that they're already way better than.
Yeah. Okay, I think we can do this. We're I think we can get them in there.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we'll keep
sorry,
planting
Croatia,
the
who are one place above them.
Fuck them. We'll just keep planting the seed that Morocco are in this World Cup, and people just go along with it.
They'll just let them in. They'll just let them in.
Yeah,
It'll be fine.
All right, like, cool.
No one will notice. Woodrow Wilson won't notice.
So this is
Bill Beaumont really confused turning up in Casablanca to his tour.
This is Namibia's second game of the tournament after they beat Morocco in the first one, didn't they?
And tell you what, hell of a performance.
Yeah, we covered
really,
that a few weeks back, didn't we?
Yeah. Go and listen to that episode.
Yeah.
It'll be on your pod feed. If you can't find it, then just keep looking.
If not, complain to @IzzyFalau.
Yes. Yeah. He's now in charge of iTunes stuff, I think.
Yeah, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, a lot of them. Yeah.
So Acast. just have a word with Izzy Falau.
Yeah.
He'll sort it for you.
Yeah.
He's really good like that. We should probably talk about Ireland.
Yeah, we should. Do we want to look at their warm-up first? Because we've talked about the Namibian team in that, I think.
Yeah.
Let's look at the
Namibian 15, I think, is what would have been considered their strongest 15.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Before we talk about all of this, before we do this, can I just ask you a question?
What?
What did you think of Vitboy?
Mate. Ryan Vitboy is my hero. Ryan Vitboy,
you know,
the greatest rugby player since Super Boot.
I was going to say, there's something on this podcast that I like to call the Super Boot effect. Which is, you just hear a player's name or you see him play, you see them get the ball once, and you just go, I like you, I've got a vibe for you.
Yep.
And with a player whose actual name is Vitboy.
And it was even better because I heard it on commentary, then I went and checked how it was spelled.
Yeah.
And it's not spelt like I was writing it in my notes.
Witboi.
It's the double O.
It's the double O.
And then an I.
Vitboy.
I had no idea his name was Ryan until I read it out
well. But to me, he's just Vitboy.
Yeah, he's Vitboy. Yeah, forget that. He doesn't have a first name. He is Vitboy.
He's Vitboy.
I thought, obviously, like, obviously, his three tries against Morocco were huge for Namibia.
Oh, did he score three?
Yeah, my man.
We're
not paying attention to Vitboy, the greatest rugby player since Super Boot.
Yeah, he's incredible, Vitboy. What I really like about Vitboy, right, he's a bit like a wind-up toy.
Yeah.
He is always running at full speed, no matter what. Unless he's stood perfectly still, which occasionally was the case. Sometimes there'd be a point where, like, the ball and the play goes beyond where he was stood on his wing, and he would just stand there. And then eventually he would recharge, and he would just run, sprint back. And what I love, he's like, he never passes the ball.
No.
At no point does he pass the ball.
Vitboy is like, he's like the car in a really early burnout game.
Yeah.
where he went from like 0 to 60 in no time and then crashes into a wall.
But smiles as he does it. He's he loves it.
He's having a great
showed
time.
Showed that wall, didn't I? Like, there's one hilarious moment in the second half where just as Namibia have come back into it, where he gets the ball like on a kick return and he does this really elaborate goose step where like he has one leg goes in the air, flies in slow motion, then the other one does the same and he moves like an octopus with his limbs all over the place. And he's saying to Andrew Trimble, like, oh yeah, come at me, right?
Tries it's like to skin- Squiddly Diddly doing a Marcus Smith impression.
Yeah, exactly. And then he tries to take Trimble on the outside. Trimble does not even go low in the tackle.
Trimble doesn't flinch.
Trimble just stands there and watches him and goes like, all right. Trimble bear hugs him and just carries him into touch. And then Vipboy just goes, all right, yeah, who cares? You know, I'm fine with that. I wanted that to happen. Love Vipboy.
Trimble has the look of someone watching a really weird experimental art film. It's like, okay, I guess this is happening in front of me. And then he stops doing it. It was great, great, okay. And he just smashes
him
into touch.
The thing about Trimble is, during that whole experience, he never forgot that he was on a rugby field.
No.
In actuality, he could still just pick the man up and just pump him onto the touchline and just he's done his job.
He never had a moment of experimental interpretational dance.
Yeah.
Great.
And the best thing is, Vipboy at one point during that whole experiment throws a dummy as well while he's like airborne. And Trimble's just like, no, what? Why would you do that? It's great. And then Trimble has a moment where when they both get up of like, Trimble has this moment of kind of squaring up to him, like, in that thing of like, you've just tried to take the piss out of me, and I've just dumped you into touch. And here's the thing of kind of squaring up to him, like, yeah, and what? And Vipboy's just like, yeah, I'm having a right laugh, and just like, does yeah. not notice that he's Trimble's like, getting angry.
I'm Vipboy, what do you want?
Yeah, exactly.
He goes back for the next time he has to explode to 60 metres an hour, having not moved a muscle for an hour.
He just sits on the touchline, and then while still horizontal, he doesn't even get back to his feet. He just zips back to his wing. He just moves
back
along
to
the
his
floor.
Wing.
Vipboy. What a player.
He's just unbelievable. I'm such a fan of him because he's a proper baller. Like, yeah. He loves to have a crack.
Yeah. Like, you know what? If there's one thing he loves, it's having a crack. I can tell you that
constantly
much.
Constantly having a crack. Makes it sound
like.
He
looks like he's on crack as
yeah,
well.
Looks like he's hanging out with Lawrence Delalio in some Romanian nightclubs.
Oh, I'm so glad
Mate,
that you
Vipboy.
Also picked up on Vipboy.
I love Vipboy.
He, I'll tell you what, his asking price in the draft has just shot up.
I know. I had this thought while I was watching it. I was like, there's going to be a bidding war for Vipboy. Do you want to know something incredible as well? He could also play scrum half.
No, he couldn't. No. You're categorically wrong. He could not play
scrum half. He won two caps of scrum half.
Okay, add it to the list.
He can't pass. All he does is run at walls.
I'll tell you what, right? A day in the life of whoever was playing fly half in that test is like, yeah, Vipboy, pass to me. And every time he just dummies, like, really extravagantly, like, elbow fully up in line with his cranium, and then throws the dummy full arm, fully extended, and then runs into the biggest player on the opposition, and they tackle him, and he's just like, oh yeah, I'm still Vipboy, aren't I? And then the fly half goes, right, okay,
I'll do it
play
again.
Nine. Yeah. The scrum half, the fly half goes like, okay, I'll go in and play nine and pass to a forward as we've been practicing and training all week. Yeah. That's fine, I'll do that. And then Vipboy's back on his feet, is like, all right, fellas, time to have another crack. You ready for it? Because I'm Vipboy, and you're not.
And him, there he is, and he steps in to play nine, and you think you know what's happening every time, and they'll be like, Vipboy, okay, we've got an overlap, we've got a five-player overlap, Morocco only have two men on their feet, come on, Vipboy, if you pass the ball, we've scored, it's done, and he looks up and he's like, I hear you guys, I hear you, Emil, great point. I love it. And he charges straight into an opposition forward. He
Without even picking up the ball.
No, yeah. Just runs straight into him. Gets backwards. Doesn't notice.
Doesn't
Hugo
notice.
Horn stepped up and pick and goed. It's fine. He's straight back up to his feet. He hears him again. He's like, it's now only three men over, but it's still happening. It's still on. Vipboy, guess what? Chips for himself to chase. Yeah. No one saw that coming.
But that's it. Like, as you say, he clearly wouldn't notice after that because all he's thinking about is the fact that he's Vipboy.
He is Vipboy.
If I was Vipboy, I wouldn't think about anything else.
I don't even think about the fact that I was Vipboy.
That man is going to live in my head for the rest of time. I love him. And the great thing is, we've got a few more games of VitBoy still to go after this.
Yep.
God. I think we've covered the Namibian team.
Yeah, there. I mean, so the important ones, right? So, Jacques Berger's at 8.
Yeah.
Unusual position for him, but fine. Eugene Yankees goes on to play in like 800 World Cups.
Yeah.
Goes on to play till 2019. Easy to scrum off.
Speaking of back row, they've got Jacques Nivenhuis at 6.
Yes.
Who went on to become a number 8 after this, I believe.
Yeah, and but, teams do please on the bench as well.
Yeah. Played in 2011.
Man of the match against Wales, infamously.
Of course, yes. Of course, in the second row, they have somebody that we've taken the piss out of the name of on this podcast before, but never actually seen him play. Is Waka Kazombiaz.
Yes.
Who I think we said sounds like Fozzie Bear having a stroke. I think that was what you said about him. But you know what? He's pretty good.
He has a good game. Great lineout operator.
Yeah, yeah.
Heine Bocker plays in the next World Cup as well, also in the team.
And Pete Van Zyl on his third cap.
Johnny Redland Hayes plays until 2015.
Of course.
On the bench. Yeah, so pretty decent Namibia.
Yeah. A lot of highlights in there.
Ireland. Finally. Ireland. After 40 odd minutes.
We've covered some important ground in that 40 minutes though, so it's fine.
I'm gonna make you take a guess, right?
Okay.
Ireland 1 year out from this World Cup, in the lead up to this World Cup, how do you think they're looking?
I reckon they're looking like pretty good. I reckon they're looking at a quarterfinal, if not a semi.
Yeah.
Is the direction they're headed in.
So, would you say you would expect maybe Ireland to go unbeaten in the autumn?
Yeah, I would say 2006? So. I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Ireland win 32-15 over the Springboks the year beforehand, year before this World Cup.
Strong result.
Really good result.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong, Namibia put 100 on them, but still, we can't all be that good, can we?
Right, Ireland win 21-6 against Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Really good result again. Really good result. And then Ireland win 61-17 over the Pacific Islanders.
Okay. That's a really strong set of results, actually. They've hammered the Pacific Islanders, who, you know, no mugs. And I've seen the teams they were putting out around that time. And
they're properly class. You're 2CPC at 10 for the Pacific Islanders in that game.
Right, okay, yeah.
I don't have the full team in front of me, but bloody he's good at rugby.
Yeah, yeah. They will have had a really good team out. I think, was that the era where they had Sivivartu playing for them?
Yeah.
And Sione Lauaki? Like, they had a couple of future All Blacks playing for them. Like, they had a serious team out. That's a really good set of results for Ireland. Like, I would expect them to come into this and think, you know what? They put more points on the Pacific Islanders than they do Namibia.
Yeah.
Wild. Wow. Wild.
But looking really good. Go into the Six Nations. First four rounds look really good. They went into the tournament genuinely as favourites. Like, they were the tipped on favourites. People saying this could be their first Grand Slam since, like, 1400. Yeah. And it was, like, really good start. They win away in Wales by 10 points. Like, really solid result over, like, a Welsh team that was misfiring, but, you know, still reasonable. They then narrowly miss out to France. It's 17-20 they lose. So it's kind of, it's looking pretty good, but then they eventually lose it to, famously, the last-minute Van Sinclair try.
Of course.
So Van Sinclair ruins that.
The bane of Irish lives, Van Sinclair. Yeah.
They then go, we can still win this. They absolutely batter Ireland, the famous Cork Park game.
Ireland?
Yes, they do. Sorry, I just hate Ireland so much that I automatically assume that...
That was the turning point. That was where it really went downhill, was where they battered themselves.
Yeah.
They couldn't field a team properly.
They battered themselves. They had a Moroccan referee who's really biased towards Ireland.
They famously are.
No, so it's the really famous Croke Park game against England, where they absolutely smashed them.
Yeah.
43-13.
Yeah.
Absolute battering. Like, one of the all-time great Irish performances in that situation.
Yeah,
like,
as
good as it ever got.
Performance, yeah. That was Ronan O'Gara getting man of the match, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Following week, Ronan O'Gara goes through the score sheet against Ireland. They win 18-19. Really narrow win. O'Gara kicks a penalty in the last 10 minutes to win it. And Ireland are in with a shout of winning it. Right, but the last day of that Six Nations is mental. Not quite to the 2015 degree, but it's probably next close after that.
Okay.
Going into the final day, right, France won top of the table, but Ireland and England could have won it, but so could Italy.
Yo.
So if Italy had won by basically an enormous margin in the last game,
okay,
they'd have won it.
If they'd have pulled on Namibia in the qualifiers, basically.
Yeah. But Ireland needed France to drop a game, or to at least come, like, draw us, whatever. Italy needed to beat Ireland with, like, by a significant margin.
Okay.
And then England needs a bunch of results to go that way.
Right.
In the end, Wales beat England. Ireland beat Italy 51-24. And France win 46-19 over Scotland.
Okay.
And basically it means France win the tournament on points difference by 4 points over Ireland.
That sounds like a bit of a banger, that Six Nations.
Yeah. We're looking at really, really tiny margins on that final day.
Six Nations is great, isn't it?
I know. Elvis Vermeulen scores a try in the last minute for France.
Oh, I remember him.
79th minute. Cup. Yeah. 79th minute, he scores a try for France that wins them the Six Nations on points difference. So Ireland, really unlucky not to win this tournament.
One minute from the end of the tournament, they thought they'd won it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then they fall short. Really good Irish team. Yeah. Like, unbeaten in the autumn. As I say, advanced on two last-minute French tries away from winning the tournament.
Yeah.
And, yeah, came into this at the start of the thing. The commentator says, Ireland, dark horses for the tournament. People were talking about it. And, of course, I asked you how you thought Ireland were doing a year beforehand. How do you think Ireland do in this World Cup?
Again, like, I think, yeah, they're looking at probably a quarterfinal, if not a semi, and potentially placed on the podium. To be fair, it's, like, they've got a good team out, and like I really like this Irish team.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why they shouldn't do well in the pool stage, at least.
Yeah, they go out in the group. So it's, as you say, a good Irish team. It's sort of 90% strength. Like, it's pretty close to full strength, this side.
Yeah. And, like, a lot of the players they have that aren't first choice are on the bench, you know?
Yeah,
or there's really trusted players on the bench, like Gerry Flannery, like Jordan Murphy, the two bests, and Paddy Wallace, you know, Michael McKelly all on the bench.
Yeah.
It's a really strong bench for Ireland, like, regardless of, you know, who they've got starting on the field. It's a really good team.
Yeah. Really strong. So you have O'Driscoll, you have O'Gara, you have O'Connell, O'Callaghan, Peter Stringer.
Yeah, Rory Best.
That classic front row of Horan, Best and John Hayes.
Yeah.
You know, with O'Connell and O'Callaghan together. Mm. Simon Easterby, who I haven't seen play in a long, like...
No.
Kind of forget about him as a player.
Yeah. Likewise. I enjoyed watching him a lot, to be fair, because he was actually a really solid flanker at everything he did. And you could tell he could play anywhere in the back row, because he did all of those skills equally.
My memories of him as a player... because I was a kid when I was watching him, thinking like, oh, he doesn't run with the ball much. He doesn't do much big carries. Mm. And kind of underrating him based on that.
Yeah.
Like, as you do when you're a kid.
Extremely solid. One of the best Irish players in this game, actually.
If you find a six-year-old who loves the way Dan Lydiot plays, sign him up because he's going to be an international coach.
Yes. Yeah. I felt like there was a lot of times, and this is extremely generational and telling of when I started watching rugby, but like... A lot of times that Easterby would come up with a turnover and I'd go like, I'd like start writing my notes like, oh, Stephen Ferris has done this. Because like, clearly like he paved the way for a player like Ferris, you know, that like, you can imagine. Yeah. I mean, the scrum cap definitely helps the aesthetic, you know, but like you can tell that he's the player that Ferris will have watched as he was kind of, you know,
coming through.
That turning point coming through. Yeah. And because it's a very similar kind of player in that they're both quick, like underratedly quick, but good over the ball and great ball carriers and tacklers.
Yeah.
Like, just really solid package of a number six.
It's a really interesting, the shift from Easterby, Wallace, Leamy to then by the next World Cup, they have Ferris, O'Brien, Heaslip.
Yeah.
And it's a complete shift in players. And yet it kind of happens slowly over the next 4 years.
Yeah.
And both are equally iconic back rows.
Yeah.
Both are kind of really famous and really celebrated. And both combine different provinces as well. Mm. It's not like it's, you know, there were periods over this era leading in where you had entire Munster back rows.
Like, you wouldn't put it down as a really good combination, and then you see it, and you go like, oh, wait, that really works.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I forgot how quick Dennis Leamy was.
Yes.
I didn't realise, because I remember Dennis Leamy, and again, like, as generational, I watched him at the end of his career. Yeah. I remember, like, for his line-out prowess, and just him being a good tackler, and just really good at the kind of nuts and bolts of a number eight. Didn't realise how quick he was.
I remember him being one of those players that is valued for his experience.
Yeah.
And then watching him gain that experience as he goes on, actually, he's one of those players that, because you didn't see him in his prime, you underrated.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
He was enormously like that. As Easterby, I undervalued, even though I saw him playing a lot of good rugby. But
and heard a lot about him, you know?
Yeah.
Growing up as...
I was just too young to appreciate what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, really good back row. Of course, the other kind of big name we've not mentioned yet is Gordon Darcy in the midfield.
Yes.
Playing alongside Brian O'Driscoll, really iconic centre partnership. Darcy is one of those players who I question whether it would happen these days because he was so extremely talented, but he seemed quite kind of like, when he'd catch the ball, the first thing he would do is see what's on for him.
Yeah.
And then he'd kind of look outside him and go like, oh, I've got Bod. So if he didn't know what to do, he could just give it to Bod, and that would work. And I don't mean that as a kind of an insult to Darcy, because I think he was an exceptional player. So talented, and like had a really good career in that 12 jersey.
He shared the fate with Kevin Maggs of being Brian O'Driscoll's foil.
Yeah.
And no matter what he could do, he would never get out of his shadow.
Yeah.
And there were periods of his career where he was playing better rugby than O'Driscoll.
That's the thing.
But you'd never toilet
anyone. That's it. Like, it kind of worked in his favour.
Yeah.
Because so many people always had the attention on O'Driscoll. But Darcy was a cracking player. Like,
I don't think he has his best game of his career here.
No, he was quite shit, to be honest.
Yeah.
But
no, I completely agreed on him
really,
in general.
Really great player. And like, it was one of those where we spoke about this with John de Villiers, like, had a bit of a dip towards the end of his career, then came back again.
Mm.
And that's, I think that's a sign of a really good 12, is that, you know, as the game changes, they can adapt to that eventually.
Yeah. Speaking of good players who had shit games, Dennis Hickey. Dennis Hickey is dog shit.
We'll get on to
in
him.
This game.
Fucking hell.
But I want to mention him because his Wikipedia page states something I think is very interesting and needs addressing.
Okay.
He is also known as Disco Dennis as a result of his quick feet. Other nicknames include Tickets.
Right.
Le Harek, which I don't understand at all. And Den Den, which I do understand perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably because he's called Dennis.
Because he lives in a den. Oh, yeah. That's probably it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he also mentioned his career. Brian O'Driscoll respectfully mentioned Dennis and his contribution to Leinster in an after-match interview after his final game for Leinster.
Was it because
Brian O'Driscoll respectfully mentioned him when, like, yeah, he was all right, I suppose.
Was it because he was the guy that he threw the ball over the head of when he did the trick?
Yes.
Or was that
Luke
Fitzgerald? I don't know.
No, I think it was Dennis Hickey.
I think it was Hickey, yeah.
The quotes, there's a quote on his Wikipedia as well. It says, I've always been a Leinster player. My dad played for Leinster, my uncle played for Leinster, my cousin played for Leinster. I'm a Leinster lad. I don't make any apologies for that. That's my team.
Because of all of that, he has always been a Leinster player. So, like, when he came out of the womb, he was born in Leinster kit.
Yeah.
That's something that people don't know about Dennis Hickey very well. That actually, he's literally always been a Leinster player. He signed his first professional contract while he was still a fetus.
Yep. So, just before this World Cup, Dennis Hickey, who had signed his first contract when he was a fetus, filled in out of nowhere for Jenny Huston on her radio show.
Okay.
And according to his Wikipedia page, was a huge hit and people were demanding him to come back.
Go on, Den Den.
He filled that in himself.
Whilst presenting the show.
An avid music fan, Hickey said, when interviewed by Ireland's Hot Press magazine, unfortunately, a lot of people I seem to like are dead now.
Oh, no. Disco Den.
Where do you think this is going? Is it going to be I was born in the wrong generation or I see dead people? Is this a sixth sense?
I think it's going in his favourite Beatle is John.
Okay. Do you want to know who Dennis Hickey's two favourite music artists are? They are not who I ever would have expected.
Are they disco artists? Disco Den.
Unfortunately not.
No.
Elliot Smith.
Okay. Wow.
Yep. And Nick Drake.
Is he okay?
Nick Drake. He's a huge Nick Drake fan.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Both brilliant artists, right? Both brilliant artists. But is Disco Dennis okay? Like, he must be really sad.
Obviously, though, I won't be seeing them in concert anytime soon, he said.
No, unfortunately which is, not.
What a gag.
Wow. I mean, I can tell that he's definitely known for his humour, is Dennis Hickey.
Yes.
But, wow. I mean, you can kind of fill in the rest of it from there on out. Like, you get the impression he's also a big fan of Jeff Buckley and David Bowie and all that kind of stuff. Like, I just didn't think that Naughty's Irish winger...
being into Jeff Buckley's really funny to me for some reason. But I can't tell you why. Yeah.
You think he's more into Dennis Buckley than Jeff Buckley, right?
Nice. Tony Buckley. That was even worse.
Jesus Christ, no. Man. That's the worst bungling of a high five I've ever seen.
I did it deliberately.
Oh, okay.
For a visual joke that no one will be able to see. This is stupid. What a podcast. Yeah. Should we move along? So, good on Dennis Hickey. Yeah. Bet he loves Radiohead, Eduardo Panavani.
Oh, yes.
Should form a Radiohead wingers club.
Yeah, exactly.
With, like, Alex Cuthbert. Don't know, let's get him into Radiohead.
Yeah, there's definitely somebody else. There's definitely another winger who's into Radiohead, because I saw this before.
Yeah.
And, like...
We've definitely had this conversation
People who know the podcast probably know that I'm obsessed with Radiohead and wanted to make 15 of other Radiohead obsessives. And Eduardo Padovani and another winger was in there. But Dennis Hickey's definitely in that club.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so, the game itself.
The game.
Can we talk about the first thing that happens on the footage on YouTube? That the commentator is talking all over the Namibian anthem. So the first thing I've written in my notes is, don't talk over the anthem, you bell end.
Yeah, I have pretty much the exact same written down. brilliant Namibian anthem.
Yeah.
It's really low in the mix.
Oh, you've got like Hugo Horn crying his eyes out.
Yeah. Oh God. Hugo Horn's really giving it some. Nico Esterhazy is properly belting it. Like, you know when you can see somebody's jaw like going below their chest because they're screaming at that loud? Like, oh, it's brilliant.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Really good anthem. Talked over by the commentators.
Yeah.
Pricks.
And look, good appreciators of music such as Dennis Hickey would not appreciate that.
No. One note the commentators do make, actually, on the Namibian team that I didn't mention. Both centres winning their second cap.
Yes.
Like, really inexperienced midfield there.
I had not heard of the 13. Bradley Langenhoven. Never heard of him, but Pete Van Zyl went on to have a long career.
Quite a good career for Namibia.
Yeah.
Bradley Langenhoven signs after this World Cup to go and play for 1880 Frankfurt, which were the
Isn't that a beer?
Yep. No, they are a team in the German leagues who were, like, German champions at the time.
Oh.
Semi-pro side. And he went on to play for them for a very long time. And good on him.
Sweet. Good on him, yeah. The other thing about the anthems is, ironically, as in Ireland's call, they say that the phrase shoulder to shoulder.
Yes.
That's when they suddenly show Paul O'Connell stood next to Peter Stringer, stood next to Donnacher O'Callaghan. And they are very much shoulder to shoulder. They are top of head to armpit.
It's a Stringer sandwich.
Yes.
Here's a filly.
Yeah.
In the middle. And then Murray Mexted, the co-coms, comes in and says something that I made a noise in the office when, of like sighing and like almost anger when he says it. He says, just before kickoff, this is going to be an education. That's an anthem I've never heard before, and this is a team I've never seen play before.
Yeah. He admits that his whole knowledge of Namibia is that he once played there.
Yeah.
And he admits that on commentary. He admits that he doesn't know anything about Namibia at all, like, really as a nation, as a team, as a group of players. He doesn't know anyone on the pitch, and that infuriated me a little bit.
I wonder how much he was paid to do this game.
Yeah. We've just spent an hour talking about Ireland and Namibia's teams, you know. It's not hard to just learn a little bit. It doesn't have to be that comprehensive. Learn a couple of players.
Yeah. We're not getting, like, paid to
broadcast this on television.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a... There were fans who did more research than he did to go and watch, you know, commentate on the game.
Yeah.
I hate it desperately. Like,
Me too.
It's a desperate thing holding rugby back. Can you imagine that happening at a Football World Cup?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where, like, whatever the lowest ranked team is, they will still know the players. They'll still talk you through them.
And he's just, in one sentence, completely dismantled them.
Yeah.
Which is so disrespectful. And, like, I really, really didn't enjoy Murray Mexted.
No,
game.
I thought he was awful.
He was being a bit of a prick all game.
A massive prick.
And the thing is, often you can see somebody on, you know, modern rugby coverage who clearly hasn't prepared any notes in commentary. And again, like I've said this before, well, I don't want to pick the bones of commentary because I imagine it's a really hard job. But you sometimes see people who haven't prepared the notes and kind of coast by on a few cliches. But Murray Baxter doesn't even do that. He literally says at one point, what's important is you need some good rugby players.
It's true. To be fair, he's got a point.
Yeah. And there's a couple of times where he says, what's really important for Namibia in this next 40 minutes, says this after half time, is they just need to try really hard. They need to make sure that they're actually trying their best. It's like, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
A 5-year-old could have told me that.
Yeah. Like, I had a conversation semi-recently with a commentator, who is a professional TV commentator, who mentioned that there are large groups of, like, former international players. And it's not all of them, but there are certain, you know, groups and certain individuals, and he named a couple, but I won't here.
Yeah.
And he or her, the commentator, basically mentioned they will often not even have a team sheet, not check the teams, just turn them expecting, you know, to go on the handful that they do recognise, having no insight, nothing prepared.
Can I copy your work, please?
Exactly. Again, they mentioned that they've had, like, them turn up, like, tipsy and stuff as well, and, like...
Jesus.
That is sometimes... It's not always standard. There's plenty of really good co-coms out there.
Of course.
That I kind of won't name
in the example.
We're talking about a minority here. We're still talking about it happening.
Yeah.
And when you've got that level of unprofessionalism happening for small broadcast club games, right, and then through to internationals, when you get to the World Cup itself, you should be having someone coming in with a level of understanding.
You should
at least have, like, Murray Mex didn't even know the Irish team that well.
Yeah.
You know, he knew O'Driscoll O'Gara and O'Connell.
You say he knew O'Driscoll. When O'Driscoll scores that first try, he calls him John O'Driscoll.
Jesus.
He doesn't know Brian O'Driscoll's name.
Jesus Christ.
There's a point.
At this point, it's like 8 years into an international career.
He's been on two Lions tours
yeah.
at this point. And like, there's a point, again, like, I think that, so John Taylor, the former Welsh international, is on the main commentary, who is a lot better than Murray Maxted.
Yes.
To say the least. Although he does at one point refer to Dennis Leamy as David Lemmy.
Same player.
Yeah. And again, I said that I was impressed by Leamy's pace, but not yes. to that extent that I thought he was a Samoan fullback.
At one point, the two of them start telling the most boring anecdote. Like, I thought the previous commentator telling us about his son one day going out and meet, and like, I thought that was boring. This, they managed to match somehow, where Murray Maxted starts complaining that, oh, we're here in France with the most beautiful food in the world, and you take me out to an Irish pub for lunch. And you're like, ho ho, I think this is the end of that jab. Let's move on. And then they talk for a full two scrums and the passage of play in between about how boring that pub lunch was. And they start recounting all the drunk Irish people thumbing around, you know, drinking in the day. Ha ha ha. Isn't it funny that the Irish are drunk all the time?
Group of people go to rugby match and get drunk before it.
Yeah. And then the commentator starts telling a story Shock. About how the TV in the hotel wouldn't work, thinking that's going to be interesting. And it's, God, it's all, it's just like...
What I really didn't like, Murray Maxted's, his punchline to that conversation was, that doesn't sound Irish, that sounds logical.
Yeah.
That's just racist.
Yeah. He's just like, he doesn't know his facts, he doesn't know the teams, he doesn't have anything insightful to say about the rugby that's being played in front
of him. Do
you
want to know...
And then he's racist like three times.
Do you want to know what he said was the way Ireland were going to win this game?
Go on.
He said, it just comes down to how good Ireland are.
Oh, come off it. And like Murray Maxted is infamous for the starting a game by saying, I don't know how this game's going to go. Like, they could want him, they could win, they could lose, or they could draw. And you're like, yeah, brilliant. And he's famous for a few of those like really daft lines.
Yeah.
But.
Which is fine.
Do your research, man. Yeah. Do your research. It just bothers me. It really bothers me because it's like, what I think it's one of the biggest things holding rugby back.
Yeah.
Like if it was, I was invited to do like a rugby room 101 type thing a few years ago. And like coverage of tier two games was like my number one thing I wanted to put in there because I just think it's disrespectful. It holds the game back. It stops it growing. It leads to this kind of growing like mentality of, you know, like superiorism. I think a lot of it comes out the rugby values bullshit.
Yes.
They're kind of like, oh, actually we respect ourselves, but it's all because it's all out of private schools and whatever.
Yeah.
It then means that it's all like, oh no, we only want our sort of people, which is from these same seven nations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the top 1%, you know.
People don't even respect Italy and Argentina.
Yeah.
You know, and they are tier one nations.
On the flip
people
side.
People barely know
this.
The Japanese team.
On the flip side of this, right? Let's think about, right, Miles Harrison, Nick Mullins,
yes.
Jamie Lyle.
Yes.
Right, people like that who genuinely, they look up the players for tier two nations, get really into them, and they watch a highlights package or something and go,
yeah, yeah.
You know what? This is super exciting. I now get an opportunity to watch Jacques Berger.
No, you're right.
Play.
We've had this rant too many times, and there's plenty of commentators who say the Knicks, Mullins and Heath, and Miles Harrison, I will rant over
shout.
All day, all week.
Yeah.
Just the wonderful, the best. Sean Maloney. Sean Maloney really great for it.
Yeah. There's so many then, really good ones that do that. And as I say, like...
As you say, younger commentators.
This game, you can go, this is a great opportunity. I get to watch Vitboy, my new favourite player now.
And I think there is a universal... Yes, I love Vitboy.
Yeah.
Bloody charging at walls. And there is a universal thing when you look at younger commentators this isn't an issue with.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jamie Lowe you mentioned, Claire Thomas. Even like, you know, like Jack Zorab, who's done a lot recently. Like, clearly does his research.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you see a young... There's a relief when I hear a younger commentator now because I know they will have done their research.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and there's loads more that I haven't mentioned that haven't come to mind.
I think we could go around in circles in this.
We've done
we?
This before. We will do this again.
But not today.
That's because we're covering every World Cup game. It comes up a lot.
Exactly.
There we
exactly.
go. I had a lot of notes about how angry I was about the commentary, so we've got them out the way early.
Yes. Game starts.
Yes.
I mean, we get like, what, 5 minutes into the game and Ireland make a break down the left and you think like, oh, okay, this is going to be, this is the way it goes. Dempsey makes a nice break along the left-hand side. I didn't realise until we started this podcast that it was not Jordan Murphy, which is ironic considering what we were just saying about taking notes. But yeah, Girvan Dempsey.
Yes.
Girvan Dempsey. I have actually got it written down that it's Dempsey on the team sheet in my notes. I then just wrote down Murphy made
it's
the break.
It's a balding Irish fullback, I get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. But look, just goes to show, commentary, not an easy job. Anyway, so Dempsey makes a break down the left. Ireland recycle quickly. Brian O'Driscoll gets the ball in midfield and then goes, might score, to be honest, lads.
Oh, mate, Brian O'Driscoll's work on that opening try is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think because he initially pops up and he does a lovely early ball
mm.
to get the move going. O'Callaghan also times his pass really well. Like, he just goes, oh, actually, there's more space here. I'm just giving it. He doesn't do the thing a lot of second rows do where they try and draw someone, they try and run it themselves. Like, no, he just gives it. He goes, these two guys are quicker
than me. Really like, Namibia clearly really target O'Driscoll in this game. He's the danger man. If you tallied up, or kind of like accumulatively, tallied up how long Brian O'Driscoll has the ball for in this game, it's very little because he's just giving the ball straight away. Really minor touches because he knows the space is elsewhere. Mm. And he has such a great game. O'Driscoll.
He's fantastic. He's fantastic. He then slots in at first receiver, having created the break in the first place with a lovely early ball, which Namibia weren't expecting, you know. As I say, you see Brian O'Driscoll and you go, oh, he's going to do something magic. He's not going to give an early pass.
Yeah. He just gives it to the nearest guy.
Yeah.
Like, really simple.
And then he slots in at 10, first receiver, does a lovely chip over, he gathers himself and scores.
Unbelievable. It felt like a cheat code.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh yeah, you're not allowed to have that.
It's the fact that he has a lovely touch the previous phase as well that does it for me.
Yeah.
It's the fact that he's involved twice in that movement.
He sets up the break, then scores the try.
Yeah. Like, with the kick as well. Like, he does all of it.
So well deserved.
A try that's 100% Brian O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
And watching this first 20 minutes, I kept thinking, I think there's an awful lot of straight lines between this Wales team and this Ireland team in 2007. In that both of them look broadly quite shambolic, but they've got one player who is just, like, transcendent, and a few players who are extremely good, and they're dragging the standard of the team up enormously.
Yeah.
So Wales had Shane Williams,
and
then he had a handful of good players around him, you know, like the Joneses in the front row, and Geffen and so on, and a few more players around there. But generally the team was not very good, but it had a few outstanding players. This Ireland team, I think, has Brian O'Driscoll, who is incredible, and he's dragging the standard up. And you've got a few players like Ronan O'Gara and Paul O'Connell and Donald O'Callaghan, who I think all three of those have very good games.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of those four players drag the standard, the rest of the Irish team up.
Yeah.
Because even though there's players like Gordon Darcy, who are very good, but have terrible games. And, like, Rory Best, I don't think, has his best game.
No.
But there's a few players who are, like, really good careers, really talented players, really excellent for very long periods, but have shoddy games and were capable of it. But then because you've got a player like Ronan O'Gara, who doesn't really have bad games, you know, like, say what you like about Ronan O'Gara. He's somewhat limited, perhaps, I suppose, as a 10. But he didn't have bad games, really. Yeah. Really. Yeah. If he did, it was very, very rare.
Yeah. And they're all clipped up on YouTube on Ruddy Darcy's
account. Yeah, all four of them. And then Brian O'Driscoll, who was just mesmeric, and even if he was having a quiet game, could still produce something out of nowhere. And then again, O'Connell and O'Callaghan, who were so tireless that you didn't kind of need them to be doing anything special.
It's interesting, because Ireland scraped through this game.
Yeah.
And yet I came out of it thinking, oh, I'm quite glad I got Brian O'Driscoll in my fantasy team.
Oh, I think, as I say, I think this Ireland team looked rubbish, except for O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
And I think this game is far closer if he's not playing.
Yes. Yeah. They're never quite in danger of losing it as long as they have him on the field.
Yeah.
I think. You know, they're in danger of being pushed close. Obviously, they are. But yeah, like there's one point I literally have written down, hickey break, parentheses, bod good.
Yep.
I don't remember quite what that means, but I imagine
It is. It's lovely by him. He times it really nicely, right for the guy. It's that moment, he did it on the 2009 Lions as well, when we were going back over that. Mm. The moment that you think, oh, he's gone himself, he can't possibly pass this now, it's too late. He gives it at that moment, he does the exact same thing for Hickey here. And Hickey has a terrible game, which starts with him being in the way of Vitboy. Namibia clear it from their own try line, and I want a moment for Eugene Yankees' kicking technique, which is bizarre. Where he kind of lifts the ball, then drops it from, like, chest height, and then swings his leg wildly, hoping to hit it.
Yeah.
Which, thankfully, gets coached out of him by the next World Cup. But he does that to clear the ball from his own try line, and Vitboy just goes, starts charging. They press the accelerate button on him. He starts charging, and poor old Dennis Hickey happens to be in his way, happens to be the guy there, when Vitboy crashes straight into him.
Look, like, as you say, Dennis Hickey's a great player, but I think he will have been listening to a lot of Pink Moon after this.
Yes.
I think he wouldn't have been happy with his performance. But you know what? As I say, brilliant player, but not very often in your career you get Vitboyed. And you know what? Today was the chosen day.
Well, okay, so he's then down for quite a while after that hit.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he's concussed. Because I think it would explain it.
It was a head-on-head contact.
Yeah. Next time the ball comes his way, he just drops under no pressure.
Yeah. Next couple of times, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's then, like, completely off his game for the rest of the match.
Yeah.
And I think, much as I will say, you know, he has a terrible game, he shouldn't be on the field.
He shouldn't.
He shouldn't be on the field beyond that point.
Yeah. We're not saying it's his fault that he's having a terrible game. It's more the medic's fault.
And I think it's probably
also Vitboy's, because he did a shit tackle on him, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
no, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
Like, that would be a red card nowadays.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of these, at the time, you're like, oh, brilliant tackle. He's absolutely smashed him.
Yeah.
But and now,
head contact, yeah, so like, that would
it's
be a red
similar to the London Irish one. I suppose it's going out more England down the line. But London Irish one recent. Actually, no, that's applicable at all times. Yeah. We could pull this out in a year's time. And be like, I was like, London Irish one this weekend, they got a red card for.
Yeah, but no, you're right. Like, it's a very similar hit to that. Like, it's not a good hit. And you're right, like, the next time they clear the ball up Hickey's wing, he drops it under no pressure.
I have written there, is Hickey concussed or shit?
I think it's the former. Yeah.
I think it's the former. The longer it goes on, you go, like, there's a clear 20-minute period where he's far below the sound of the rest of the game.
That's it. Vessels does notice, who's the 10 for Namibia, does notice this and constantly kicks down his wing. And he's constantly dropping the ball. There's a point where Ireland get up to the Namibian try line. Mm. O'Driscoll does this wonderfully timed pass to set Dempsey away. And Dempsey does that thing of, I've got a man outside me. It's probably an 80% try now, but if I give it, it's going to be 100%. Mm. And he gives it and Hickey drops it, like 5 minutes out from the try line. And again, it's very clearly because he's not kept up with what's going on.
Yeah.
And again, not his fault.
No, not his fault.
Not completely a criticism beyond of him.
It's just that, again, there wasn't the awareness around concussion at this time.
No.
Within rugby, it was growing in NFL at this point.
Yeah.
And perhaps there should have been. But nowadays, thankfully, that would be treated very differently, and Hickey wouldn't have played on at all.
Yeah,
I think there's maybe like a 3% chance Hickey plays as much of the game as he does.
Yeah.
Oh no, 0% chance he plays as much as he does, but he's probably off inside a minute.
Yes,
nowadays.
Yeah, like there was the Abbey Dow thing in the World Cup final, which
just every now and again it happens. Thomas Francis last year.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it does happen, but someone would get to it eventually, and he wouldn't be able to have the. You know, eventual impact he does have on the game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because to be able to stick on Jordan Murphy, who was raring to go.
We have a word about Emil Vessels.
Yeah.
And maybe a fly.
Go on then. Talk to me.
He looks like he's loading for the first half. He has this weird thing where he kind of stands in like a video game, like menu select screen at all times with his shoulders darting slightly, like dancing up and down slightly. And then when he'll do something, it'll normally be mostly there. You know, like he goes for this real snap drop goal attempt in the first 15 minutes that's not on at all. But
I loved that.
We were both having flashbacks, and it would be his first game in the World Cup.
That was my first thought.
Yeah.
Was like, oh my God, do they do this to start every World Cup? Is they just have their fly off randomly drop kick a ball miles and it goes really
just
well?
See how it goes. Yeah. Just
he
wide.
Does miss,
yeah.
But it's a bloody good attempt.
Yeah.
To say he stood, I think, in the first row of the crowd. And I think he stood maybe somewhere in Saint-Denis and he just boots the ball randomly and it goes near the post.
Like, yeah, he stood inside Paul O'Connell's shorts.
Yeah,
like, exactly. He's right up to the Irish line.
Yeah. It's bizarre that he goes for that, but I just thought, yeah, random drop kick attempt. I love it. More of it, please.
Yep. Love it. I'm very into him and his weird loading pose.
Yeah.
And like his first shot at goal, he misses. But I think cause he like glitches out and he looks like he's still at like 70% when he's getting there.
Yeah. It's incredible that we've got two playable characters between him and Vitboy.
Yes.
Two video game characters.
So we then have a couple of brilliant moments by Andrew Trimble.
Yes.
Right? The first one, Andrew Trimble gets the ball. It's 10 metres out from the try line. And Ireland have been attacking reasonably well. You know, they haven't quite pierced them through, but they're consistently recycling the ball and so on. They get the ball out to Trimble on the wing. And Trimble looks up and he sees opposite him, Heini Bock. And he goes, he's left me 50 metres on the outside. I'm taking him here.
Yeah.
He goes to take him on the outside. Bock gets across quite easily and starts to put him towards the touchline. At which point Trimble goes, huh, and drops the ball and walks into touch.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary.
Look, yeah.
The wingers throughout this game had they were really the highlights, I would say.
Yep. Shortly afterwards, like, Namibia clear, Ireland work it back, they're given a penalty, and Ronan O'Gara does a classic Ronan O'Gara thing, like he'd done against South Africa not long before this, where he looks up, takes a quick tap, and does the cross kick to Trimble, who scores in the corner. Just really sharp thinking by O'Gara.
Really sharp thinking. I can't imagine it was that common at this point as well.
And like that first 20 minutes, the first kind of half, in fact, sort of the first 60 minutes odd.
Yeah.
Ireland look pretty rubbish, but then as you see in the kind of that first half an hour, Brian O'Driscoll has one moment of being brilliant, Ronan O'Gara has one moment of being brilliant, and that's what separates the sides.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. And you're right, like, it took the kind of permanent experience of O'Gara to execute that, and it's on the money. It's on the money.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Then, not long after that Trimble try, Easterby scores.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's that one's one of those pretty simple tries, right, that you see a lot of, again, when a team starts battering another one, that feel it very much feels like, you know, the filler and the try sandwich that that Ireland are, well, it's more like a Big Mac, the way that they're constructing at the moment. But, yeah, so Easterby just kind of flopped through the middle of a what was, I think, a maul and ended up as a ruck. And he just flopped through the middle of that. And you think, like, you know what? It's quite soft defence. Namibia looking quite tired. I can't see any way back for them here.
I have written O'Callaghan, then cross it out, right? Easterby try.
Yeah.
Because you can't quite tell who scores
it
at first.
Lots of confusion, yeah.
The commentators aren't sure at all. No one knows until they eventually get back and like, oh, it was Easterby. Try, drive over, whatever.
I think you've pretty much summed that up. You can very much tell we're both backs or fans of backs.
Yes. There's a great bit, though, speaking of forwards, in which Namibia piles seven players into one ruck. And Ireland fall for it and don't mark them through the middle, because they pick and go through the middle of a ruck where they had seven players.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, where else is everyone going to be? There's no one stood nearby. There's not a scrum half in place. Of course they're picking and going.
They'll be hoping that they do that tactic that Japan were running, where you just have a fly half stood 30 yards from the ruck, and you just spin the ball halfway across the field and hope for the best. They're hoping that they'd do that, but instead, no, forward you all, lads.
It's really confusing as well at this period, where Paul O'Connell has hair, and Dennis Hickey doesn't, but has a similar shaped cranium.
I mean, you say all of this, right? Rory Best not only has hair, also it looks really slim. Rory Best.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I remember really
slim
trimmed.
Rory Best.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, wearing long sleeves.
Oh.
The first sighting of a long-sleeved top in the 2007 World Cup. Oh. You see, so I was told to look out for this by my coach, who I've been told I'm allowed to mention his name.
Okay.
So a former Glasgow player and Nottingham player and Scotland 20s captain, Murray McConnell.
Plays halfback partner with Finn Russell.
Yes, indeed. And they're quite good friends growing up. I believe they're still in touch. But he's an excellent coach, I will add. But he mentioned that he'd listened to an episode of this podcast, which, first off, I was like, okay, how is a former professional rugby player going to respond to
this
that?
This bullshit.
Yeah, because this is not designed for anybody who knows what they're on about to ever hear. But no, he was really good about it. He said that, you know, it's the nichest thing I've ever heard, but, you know, it's very good. He's extremely supportive of what we do, which is very nice. But when I mentioned earlier we're doing 2007 next, because this was the end of the 87 one, because that makes it even more weird.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, so that was what? John Smith lifting the trophy. Keep an eye out for long sleeves on front row forwards. And so I've been on sleeve watch ever since we started this. And it's the thing that angers him most about this era of rugby. Isn't anything to do with the play, it's the sleeves.
Well, no, because it's the fingerless gloves for me.
Yeah.
Orange fingerless gloves.
That was my response to him, was like fingerless gloves. Not orange, because I hadn't got there yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But fingerless gloves and, you know, the Andy Goud era was that's kind of what I think of when I think of, like, what's the standout thing.
Remember the era when Andy Goud was a minor comedy character in rugby?
Yeah.
Rather than Piers Morgan.
Yeah. We both went to the same place.
That's funny, because it's correct. He's just bloody... Anyway.
Anyway, Rory Best has long sleeves on.
Rory
That's my
Best
point.
Rory Best has long sleeves on. Simon Easterby scores a try. Namibia pile a bunch of people into a point. Bessels looks like he's loading.
Namibia made that break, and the crowd love it.
Mate, not just Namibia make a break. Oh, no, sorry, the front row break. Yeah.
As soon as that happens, like, the crowd roar.
We also have, though, around this period, another thing that gets the crowd up and going. for Vitboy makes a break.
Vitboy!
It's fantastic. He just, again, the phrase is, he has a crack.
He does have a crack. Have you ever seen that, and you're going to see where this is going, and so do all the listeners. Have you ever seen that YouTube video called Longest Yeah Boy Ever?
Yes.
Should we try Longest Vitboy Ever?
No.
Vitboy!
So, yeah, Vitboy has a crack, does brilliantly. Yeah. And I think they maybe have two breaks around the same time. And the crowd really start to get behind them. And they're a bit like, oh, they haven't come here to fall over. You know, they're not necessarily going to win, but they really get behind this team who have come to play some rugby.
Yes.
To, you know, the thing I have in my notes is the Vitboy is a baller. And he comes to ball.
He's a lot of things. Baller's maybe a stretch, but he's a legend. I can tell you that much.
So then, they maybe having missed a drop goal on a penalty that was a long way out between the posts. Then, up steps Tirtis Lopsa,
yeah,
the fullback, who goes for the longest drop goal you will see this side of wherever he isn't.
What's mad about that? He catches it about 60 metres out from the try line. He looks like he's just dropped the ball. Like, I was thinking, like, what the hell is he doing? Why is he just dropping the ball? And then he swings it. It's like, oh, wait, that all looked accidental. And I had to kind of go back and watch it again. Like, no, he's deliberately going for a drop kick there. Like, he's trying to score 3 points. I just can't see how that would cross anyone's mind. And loved it.
He's so close.
Unbelievable.
Like, it fades just wide. To say, he's completely in the corner on the halfway line. And like, almost nails it.
As it crosses the in-goal area, yeah, it sails across the face of the post. Like, obviously a bit late because it's, you know, it's behind the post at this point. But it does eventually, like, intersect with the area where the posts are.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's how close he is.
It's amazing. It's a really amazing strike. And he deserved points for it. Mm. He deserved, like, 2 points for it, you know?
Sure,
for,
yeah.
Just for effort, for being really close.
Yeah,
range.
Yeah.
Like in basketball.
Yeah. But in basketball, you don't get points if you miss.
No, you do.
But, oh, do you?
Yeah. We should watch some basketball back when we do that.
Sure, just to verify that.
Yeah.
Maybe watch every basketball game ever?
That's a bit much.
Okay.
Should we watch, pick a season of the NBA?
All right. What about 1999?
1999 NBA. So
yeah,
can fit
because
in
we
with,
have that video game.
We have the video game. With that,
the
when
Hornets,
I got,
Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, when I bought a PS1 to play Journal Army Rugby, and it came with a copy of NBA 1999.
Yeah. Outside of the Hornets on my team.
Yeah.
Don't know if they're real, but...
I can't remember who I played as, but they had a player called Corbin, and I was really
I
into that.
This, yeah. They were all well tall. It was incredible,
even
on video.
Yeah, so we're doing the 1999 NBA, we're doing the 1987 Premiership,
yeah,
we're doing the 2006 African qualifying for the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah. Reese Witherspoon.
We're doing Reese Witherspoon movies, we're doing all the Rugby League World Cups,
yeah,
and we're doing like some under-20s games.
Yeah, doing loads of stuff. All right.
Yeah. Cool.
You'll never run out of content on the Squidge channel.
I'm going to die someday.
Yeah, same.
Laupser misses this incredible drop goal. Laupser had a fascinating international career where he wins 10 caps but plays in 2 World Cups.
Oh, wow. Fancy
weird
that.
Weird career.
I feel like I've heard his name before.
Yeah, he played in 2011.
Losper. Oh, really?
He played in 2011, but...
Right, TC Losper, yeah. I remember being under that name. Yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah, fascinating player.
Yeah.
In this game, but probably doesn't play for the rest of the tournament. Who knows? We'll find out later on. But yeah, interesting guy. Attempts that drop goal. Looks accidental. Extremely deliberate. I then just have written, fight? With like 5 exclamation points after it.
Yes.
Really weird fight.
One of these games where you don't think the stakes are high enough to be a fight.
Yeah, exactly. Because the camera cuts away for ages. Like just after a line-out that was like reset.
Mm.
You know, and you just think, oh, okay, it's one of those. We'll just watch the kick that got us to this place. You know, and then suddenly everyone's swinging for each other.
Ireland are 19-0 up. Like, it's not a game where you start a fight.
Yeah, very strange one. I'm not really sure what was going on, but yeah, pretty uneventful fight in the end. No one gets sent off.
Yeah, I have Marcus Horan, that was shit, written down, but I didn't know what that was.
Because he goes on his own. It runs this really weird line where he goes completely on his own, just neglects the rest of his team, and Jacques Berger gets a jackal penalty off it.
Yes, completely. Isolates himself completely.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big moment of maybe getting momentum.
Yeah.
I think it's that and those 2 breaks. And I'm slowly
showing
like,
that they can physically match them.
Yeah, and defensively as well. They exploit the little like individual moments of not being the smartest.
Yeah.
That they can take them, they can take the chances, and they can kind of get back in the game. And I think that's one of those huge things.
Yeah.
And also, Horan, that was shit, sounds like a quote from a One Direction, Let It Be.
Yeah, Mike Phillips would have said that.
Yeah.
But that's the penalty that leads to... the first real opportunity at points in the game. On the stroke of half-time, Vessels goes for it from 40 metres, and he nails it. And you think, good, I'm glad Namibia are on the board. Yeah. Well-deserved.
Absolutely well-deserved.
As I said, they've shown that they've resisted the Irish first onslaught. They've scored 3 tries early on. And they've gone, you know what, we're not going to roll over and die. Because usually these hammerings don't go that way. Usually they humour the opposition early on, and then they roll over and die, rather than the other way around. Like, Namibia weren't trying for the first 30 minutes. They're like, yeah, we're just saving it all for later.
It's taken him 40 minutes, but much like the Avengers game on PS4, he's finally loaded.
Yes, yes, and well done to him. So the score at half-time is 20 points to 3 to Ireland. And you know what? That seems a fairly reasonable reflection of how that half has gone. So the second half starts. Very first note I have written down is Bod skins a man, Hickey drops it, which could apply to anything.
I have Hickey, not Sticky. And also it's not Slicky.
We'll work with that. We'll work with that. We'll think about better ways of phrasing that potentially, but I like it. Berger puts another great shot on Horan. Mm. And again, it's another one of those moments.
Jacques Berger really starts to come into his own from about half an hour onwards.
He's bloody good, isn't he? Because the thing about Jacques Berger is he's known to be one of the best legal tacklers in rugby.
Yes.
Like, all the tackles he made, you rarely see him give penalties away. He's a body-on-the-line kind of guy, a great leader, but he's just such a cool head. There's the thing that stands out about him most. And you can really see that in this game, the maturity of him.
There's a point in the second half where Jacques Berger takes a blow to the head and nowadays would have gone off.
Yeah.
And it's...
He did go off for blood at one point.
Yeah. I can't say that he's concussed for certain, but he takes a blow to the head and he should have been HIA'd. Yes. You know, with what we know nowadays.
Yeah.
But Jacques Berger is maybe the only player that I kind of look at and go, you know what, I'm okay with you playing on. There's something about the way that he played and the way that he didn't give a shit about his own body.
Yeah.
You know, I remember like games where he played for Saracens where he would like almost break his ribs.
Yeah.
You know, and then for Namibia in the
It's fascinating
next
because
few
you think
Cups.
Of a player like that and what comes to mind is like a Lewis Moody or someone who is just an absolute madman, or even like a Liam Williams, for instance, who is nuts. Right. Jacques Berger is so calm in everything he does.
Yeah.
And there's a real sense of just accountability that comes with Jacques Berger.
Yeah,
yeah. Of just like, you know what, you're in safe hands.
Yeah. Yeah. He also has like a proper like 15-metre run off the ball as well, which you never see.
Weird, isn't
it? I remember him getting man of the match for Saracens on like a European semi-final.
Mm.
And the commentator, I think it was Graham Simmons, the interviewer, asking him the first question was, there was this egg-shaped thing out there. Did you touch it at all? And he went, yeah, I had a little carry in the first half. And then I think I did a pass in the second half.
I think that was the final, you know.
Was it the final?
Because I seem to remember that game was like the earliest I've ever seen a man of the match given, because Stuart Barnes gave it on like 68 minutes or something.
Wow.
Ridiculously early as he went off it, like injured. But it was like, well, this is a one-horse race. Like, he's so clearly man of the match. And you're right, like, sometimes he would do it without touching the ball or touching the ball once in a game, just because his impact was such just without the ball, and he took so much pride in those really simple jobs.
Yeah.
What made him such a great player.
And so seeing him do that, do his usual stuff, but also having a nice run with the ball, I enjoyed that.
It's the fact he did those before he got the captaincy is what I love. Like, you look at him and go, he's such an obvious candidate to take the captaincy later on.
And he also wasn't even the player that's playing at a higher level.
No.
You know, like, he was playing in the Pro D Dart at this level,
God,
which is kind of equivalent to a lot of
them.
God, he was excellent. And this is kind of, I think, a big standing up and a big kind of announcement of, here I am, I'm here to stay, I love my country, I love Namibia, and I will tackle my guts out for any team, any set of teammates alongside me.
Yes. There's one point where he does this weird grubber kick through.
That is terrible.
Which is terrible.
That is terrible. And he has a brilliant game otherwise, but he does a terrible kick as a bad option.
What I love about that kick is he sends it through. It's like on the 22. Mm. He's got a handful of players outside him. I think he's got Van Zyl outside him. And on the wing, crucially, he has Hugo Horn, who sees the hooker, Hugo Horn, who sees the kick go in, looks at the ball and goes, fuck that.
Yes.
And just does not run after it at all.
I love that there was a moment where we both assumed that our audience would know who Hugo Horn is.
Yeah, I know.
This podcast is so niche, as you mentioned.
It certainly is. But yeah, so Namibia do start to slow everything down. Mm. Like, they're very deliberate in the way that they do everything. They're extremely cautious that if Ireland get more momentum, they will run away with this game. And they're really smart in the way that they play kind of the tempo of it.
Mm. But there is this one issue that creeps in. The longer the game goes on, the more dominant Ireland scrum becomes.
Yeah.
And Namibia keep the same props on, but from about 45 minutes onwards, they really tire. Yeah. And before that, they weren't doing great, but they were able to retain their own ball, and they were kind of just about getting away with it. The longer the game goes on, the more and more dominant Ireland became, to the point in which they were just blowing them off their own ball constantly.
You say this is an issue, and you know what? You're right. It really does become an issue, because I'm going to say something, and I really hope it's not controversial here. I hope it's something you can get behind me, or at least understand where I'm coming from. I like rugby.
Oh, no.
I like.
We all know what this means.
I like rugby, okay? Look, kill me for saying it. Boot me off the podcast if you have to. I stand by that opinion. I like rugby, okay? One thing I like about rugby is, I don't know, the tries that go on, the tries
that
are scored.
Do you like tries? Oh yeah, you like tries, do you?
And do you know what I really like about the try? It's when somebody, an individual, a human, sometimes dog, when a player crosses that little try line, that white line, and puts the ball on the floor. I really like that. And this imposter in here, Joël Juge, the referee from France.
Yes, can we have a word about Joël Juge?
Yes, if we must.
So I just want to pause your tirade to talk about Georges Jouquet, who, yes, is... So now went on to become better known, I think, as a referee administrator, went on to be in charge of French referees, and then in charge of World Rugby's referees, which he's been in charge of for a few years now. So he's one of the big commissioning people for refereeing at World Rugby.
Okay, yeah.
But he also had a playing career before this.
Oh, did he?
He was Colomier's backup nine to Fabien Gauthier
in his playing career. No way! That's mad!
And you can see how that probably drives a man crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, it drives him to wanting to become a control freak referee.
They've both gone in completely different directions.
Yep. Both massive control freaks, clearly.
Yeah.
But, like, you're caught behind one of the best players in the world, who is literally also Fabien Gauthier, and that level of driven and determined and not wanting to give anything to anyone
else. Oh, yeah, he's
a nutter. Yeah. And so he was, caught for Colomier, second choice to Fabien Gauthier.
So interesting.
And it led him to not only become a control freak, he becomes a referee, but to become the head of refereeing at World
Telling
Rugby.
Telling people how to tell people to do things.
Yeah. Like, that is another level of frustration that you are taking out.
That's
there.
That's mad.
And he also looks like he loves mountain bikes.
Yeah, sure. I'll get behind that.
He does. He looks like he's got that sort of, like, fitness, but, like, not want to show off about it, lads, but, like, love to go mountain biking on the weekend.
Never seen without cycling shorts on.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, one of those wankers that's full Lycra.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But point is, it gives a penalty try to Ireland. Not fair. Not on. Not good. Not cool, Joël. Not cool.
But... yeah, I think it's he goes very early with the penalty try as well.
He does.
Second
if,
scrum.
If I were the kind of person who liked penalty tries, I would say he was correct.
He goes second scrum, and he goes about 5 or 6 metres out from the try line.
Yeah.
The moment that maybe you start to infringe, he goes, no, I'm going here. Yeah. I'm not waiting any longer. I've had enough. I want to give a penalty try, bro, because I love control.
Yeah. God, Joël. You bloody phony. But yeah, there's Ireland's kind of big momentum point at the start of the second half.
So that's in the 48th minute. And it puts them to 27-3. And you think, oh, they're in control of this game. This is kind of dead now. That's kind of killed the game. That's the bonus point try. You kind of think that's it. And then a few things happen. One is Lauspa accidentally invents the crossfield bomb. Where he goes to put up an up and under and it goes so badly it goes sideways. And he accidentally invents a tactic that will give André Pollard a career.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, though... what André Pollard lacks. It's like, he kicks those to Chesney and Colby all day.
Yeah.
Fucking Lauspa kicks them to Vitboy.
Man, there's no getting away from Vitboy.
No.
Gordon Darcy drops it. Part of his, like, really weird game
that
Darcy has, where, like, you can tell he's talented, you can tell he's a good player, but he's having a bad day. Like, at one point he picks a really lovely line and just drops it under no pressure.
Yeah.
At one point he times his pass brilliantly and the other player drops it because it's a shit pass around his ankles. Yeah. You know, he throws a ball that's never on, and it's like an absolute pearler, but it would have gone to the other, you know.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you there. There's a point where I didn't remember this, but now I've written it down, I've just remembered it. I've got a point in my notes where I've written it down. Vitboy steps in at 10 and calls the set move dummy.
Yes!
He stands in and, like, proper, like, gestures to his backline, like, yeah, set something up, get loads of runners off me, innit? Like, and then catches the ball and then does not even do as much as look at the players outside him, just dummies the ball and just runs back where the ball came from.
Mate.
And clearly he'd said to somebody, I'm going to dummy it.
That is deception.
It certainly is.
You think he's going to pass? He's not, because 1, 2, 3, he's
Vitboy!
What
but
a player.
It's that thing of like,
what an
he clearly
icon.
Has not looked where the space is.
No,
he's just
of course
gone,
not.
I just want to have a crack.
He loves to have a crack.
Oh, good old Vit boy. So much entertainment provided.
So this is, Namibia's starting to get more and more in the game. They start kicking really well,
yeah.
I think, in this period. Vit boy is completely on it. He's smashing everything. He's running
he's just
wherever
having a
he
crack.
Goes. He's constantly having a crack. Namibia at one point have a penalty that is very kickable. They decide to go for the try instead.
Mm.
I think we can really get back into this. You know, they're... so 15 points behind, that's doable. That's doable, that's all
right.
Yeah,
yeah. Good on him. Ambitious.
And at one point, despite the fact the only thing that's going badly for them at this point, the momentum started to swing, but the scrum is still on top. And yes. Whenever they get a scrum, it's going one way only.
Indeed.
At that point, the commentator says, one of the least impressive things about this Irish has been the scrummaging, and I think Argentina will really target them there.
No, no.
And then, to his credit, Murray Mechstead goes, no, actually, the scrum's going really well.
Yeah. No, you're spot on. But as you say, like, a lot of the territory is in the Irish 22, you know, like, that is where the game is being played. And then, yeah, that Jack Berger kick happens.
Yes.
Ireland force it for a 22 dropout. And then, you know what? You say Rog doesn't have bad games. He certainly has bad moments.
Yeah.
The thing that surprised me about this, I'm seeing this for the first time. This hasn't been clipped up by Ruddy Darty yet and put on his YouTube. This 22 dropout. Oh, man.
There's still, like, 6 moments of Ogara being shit.
It's so shit, this. And like, Ogara, I think, generally has a good game.
Yeah, right?
And manages the game brilliantly. But this 22 dropout, what the hell is he doing? He essentially drops the ball on its point and then just kicks it perfectly straight. So it goes like 5 metres and is perfectly about chest height for the Namibians to catch.
Yep.
And that they do, and they take the ball in. And they set up a really good attacking platform.
Yeah, they set up a lovely stuff. It's sort of similar to the Japanese structure we were talking about earlier, where they have a fly off sort of 50 metres away from the ruck, and then everyone else is 30 metres away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, they have just the 10, they have just Vessels stood in at the kind of traditional first receiver position. Then he's got to throw, like, a 30 metre miss pass to get to the second receiver. Like, he's got no one near him. And Ireland, quite cleverly, go, well, hold on, we'll just mark all of this space where there's nobody, because there's no way he's getting it wide.
But what's quite important here is the lads who look at it and go like, well, we'll mark the space they're clearly not going to being wide. The two lads who do that are obviously Marcus Horan and John Hayes, the two props. And they just go, nah, I'm not running over there. I'm just going to stand here and watch these guys.
Okay, the intercept's on, but I don't want it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not running 80 metres.
We'll just stay here because realistically, they're not going to come this way.
No. They're just going to, at best, they're going to throw a wide ball that'll be in the air so long, like, I don't know, like Hickey or someone will step in and smash them, Trimble, whoever's out there. Who cares? It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
But the thing that they don't realise is that the man in front of them that's lingering on the wide outside, ready to tear through them.
Winding himself up,
ready to burn down the Irish Empire.
He is stood there. Finger on the button, waiting for the 3 to turn to a 2 to start to fade into a 1 so he can get an extra speed boost as he presses the button to accelerate.
And that man is Vic Boy! Vic Boy gets the ball.
He explodes onto the ball. And burst right through. It's a hell of a line.
We've had a laugh about Vic Boy. This is fucking incredible.
It's class. He absolutely bursts through the Irish defence. They're all like, what?
He sells what? John Hayes to the point where he does a 180 to check where the pass has been thrown, like with a dummy. He does a full 180 to see where Vic Boy is. It's like, oh, wait, he's on John the 5 metre line.
John Hayes goes to the local shop.
Yeah.
He's in an Aldi down the road.
Yeah.
Trying to find the dummy he's just been sold.
And Marcus Horan just literally, Vic Boy's 2 steps outside and he goes, nah.
He's like, I'm not having that. I'm not having this.
Good luck. Yeah. Try lines over there if you want it.
He's like, good one, good line, mate. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And Vic Boy skins Horan, gets on the inside of Hayes and like outpaces like O'Callaghan on his way there.
Yeah.
And he sees coming across Andrew Trimble and he's like, nah, I'm stepping inside you, pal. And then just does this perfect right foot stab off his boot and then goes on the inside, rides the tackle of Andrew Trimble. And it's like, this is so perfect.
But you're like, you think he's going to make the line.
Yeah.
And Trimble stops him just an inch short.
Oh, it's a brilliant like, tackle considering it's on
Vic Boy. If Trimble's a split second later, Vic Boy is over. Vic Boy is scoring.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's one of the greatest tackles in the history of the game by Andrew Trimble.
Yeah, it's fantastic. especially when you consider it's on literally one of the best players.
It's on Vic Boy.
Yeah, it's on Vic Boy.
It's on Vic Boy.
Who pops it off the floor to Jack Nivenhouse running. What an angle he runs.
And also, supporting
what
line.
A pickup he makes as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It goes slightly to his side and you'd forgive him for dropping that.
Well, Vic Boy's never passed before. Exactly. Give him a break.
It's the first time he's ever let go of the ball.
Vic Boy pops it off the floor. Nivenhouse takes it. And he doesn't even dive over. He just like strolls over the line and takes it between the posts.
And he's just like, oh, what the hell's just happened there? But it's a brilliant try.
Fantastic.
I would potentially argue it's the best try of the game.
I think so. I'd agree. I'd agree with that.
It was fantastic.
I mean, O'Driscoll's actually the excellent,
pretty good. But
he's not a bit boy, is he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then again, it is slightly dragged down by the fact that one of those is scored by one of the greatest players of all time. Greatest players of all time. And the other one is Brian O'Driscoll. So, what a try. Namibia back in the game. And you can't help but cheer for them. You know, you're thinking like, well, they're up to 10 points now. 27-10, I think the score is now. And you just think, right, all the momentum's with them. That's so well deserved. And Nivenhouse in particular has worked his arse off. Like, in attack, in D, like, in the breakdown, he has been at the heart of everything that Namibia have done.
Absolutely. Deserves a try. Yeah. Perfectly.
And it's just telling that one of those is eventually going to stick. He runs those support lines all day long. Someone's actually going to make the break and he's going to score off it.
Vessels fully loaded, a lot like Herbie, kicks the conversion. And Namibia suddenly, with a renewed sense of vigour that you often see from Tier 2 nations when they score that try and they're like, even though it puts it to, you know, 27-10, they're still like, you know what, we're kind of in this. And you expect that momentum to fade. And it doesn't.
Because it takes one big Irish tackle maybe to prevent that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Big dislodge of the ball, a huge breakdown turner by Easterby. Like, you know, something like that will kill the Namibian momentum and just doesn't come.
It doesn't happen. Because shortly afterwards, Namibia, as I said, start kicking really well. Vessels puts in a really good kick. Ireland eventually go to clear it. And who should the ball go into the hands of? But the one, the only,
Vitboy. He's everywhere, man. He's everywhere.
He's not. He's very specifically in one zone.
Yeah, he's on the wing.
Yeah, he's constantly waiting on the same wing.
Yeah.
But when he does have the ball there, he is everywhere.
Yeah. He runs across the pitch, left, right, backwards, forwards, up and down, you know, the lot, backflips, does loads
of stuff. He's just in that one space a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he has a bit of a counter-attack. He gets tackled, doesn't he? And they work on the other wing, where Heini Bock, who has clearly been watching his other winger doing a lot of work and gone like, fancy about that. You know what I might do? Might have a crack.
And you know what? Have a crack he does.
He grubbers the ball around Andrew Trimble on his wing.
One of these things, when you see it from the first angle, the live angle, it looks like it goes into touch.
Yeah.
When you see it on the reverse angle, and it clearly doesn't, you've got what a phenomenal bit of skill.
That's inch perfect.
Yeah.
Like, grubbers it, around Trimble, and it bounces, I would say quite nicely, but I wouldn't say perfectly.
No. But the waiting on the kick has been such that you can forgive the fact that it's extremely good bounce instead of perfect. But
what makes up for this is Pete Van Zyl. This is an unbelievable piece of skill he pulls off.
Mm.
So off his left foot,
he
reaches out at full hamstring stretch and kind of bends at the knee, like lifts it over his knee to volley the ball into the distance. It's unbelievable. Have a look at this try. I might post it or something because an unbelievable.
Mate, you want the first try of Vitboy. Post them both.
Why not? Unbelievable piece of skill to volley the ball or hack it downfield at full stretch and not break stride afterwards.
That's the thing. Because he then starts kind of chasing the ball normally.
Mm.
And then he looks up and you can see it on the reverse angle. You can see the kind of from behind. You can see the look on his face as he looks up and clocks where Gervin Dempsey is.
There's a specific moment where he realises, oh, I'm in here.
He realises, like, this is on.
Yeah.
And he suddenly goes in. He goes from, like, that pretty quick run that teams do when chasing the ball, because you know you've got to adjust and, like, when something comes, into a full-on sprint instantly, because he sees Dempsey is just jogging across.
The kick he has just done is essentially like a scissor kick or a bicycle kick in football, right?
Yeah,
which usually knocks a man off their feet. And it's the fact that he stayed balanced and he stayed on his feet and gone, oh, no, I can sprint here. And he knows that he has to work hard for about 6 or 7 seconds.
Yeah.
And he is scoring.
Yeah.
And you're right, he skins Dempsey on the inside.
Dempsey is jogging. Dempsey has no idea he's there until the last second.
Yeah. I think, again, he's stunned by how well those kicks have come off.
Because
they're both so ambitious. And yet, Fansale,
he gathers it an inch out.
Yeah. Dives over. Brilliant finish.
Great finish.
Yeah, that's a try of a team that just thoroughly deserved to be here. And you think, like, oh, this game's not what I expected it would be.
No. Leaves the score. Once Vessels kicks the conversion, 17-27. And momentum all with Namibia.
Yeah.
And the crowd completely with Namibia as well. Like, amazing occasion to have come out to. So, like, they're giving it a proper crack.
The thing that really got me on my feet was immediately after this try, they get the kickoff. Yonchis puts a mega boot downfield and Dennis Leamy knocks it on in his own half. And you're like, oh my God, they're completely panicking. They're so rattled.
Ireland, as you said, look rattled.
As I say, it's that period of 10 minutes where Namibia are thoroughly the better team.
And so then there's a moment shortly after this where Ireland have the ball about halfway. They regather it thanks to, you know, their dominance at the scrum here.
Yeah.
And play gets quite loose. Like, everything breaks up a bit. Everyone's kind of in that way that happens when there's been a few drop balls in a row.
Yeah.
And things start to get a bit loose and everyone's kind of in offside positions or all over the place positions. And one of the Irish players goes to throw a really ambitious pass out
Stringer,
the wing.
Stringer.
Yeah. Spots the space on the wing, goes to throw it wide. And Nivenhouse comes in for the intercept, reaches up and just about gets his fingertips to it and can't quite catch it.
Yeah.
And there was a moment, I was watching this in the office and you were there next to me, where I made a really loud involuntary noise. Like, oh! Because I thought he was going to take it.
It's one of those, it's 100% worth going for.
Yeah.
If he misses it and they go the length, so be it.
For a split second, I thought, even though I'm watching this back, and even though I know Ireland win it, and even though I know how this goes, and maybe you haven't won a World Cup game before, never mind being Ireland,
yeah,
and we'd know if they did.
Yes.
For a second, as that ball's in the air, and you see Nivenhouse going for it, you do think, oh, this is it. He's in. Like, if he takes that ball, at the very best, he's being tackled in the 22.
And he's offloading to somebody quicker. Who could potentially score. Like, that is a huge momentum swing moment.
Yeah.
That is literally, that ball dips an inch lower, and, you know, Namibia are looking at bringing this to a 3-point margin.
And they missed 3 shots of goal in the first half.
They did. It's wild, like, how close this game actually was.
There's a world in which this put Namibia 6 points up.
Yeah.
With, what, like 15 minutes to go?
Yeah.
And I don't know if they see it home from there, but it's a very different game, I think, if Nivenhouse takes that.
Yeah. I think it's doubtful that they'd see it home because Ireland have a strong bench and they would have emptied that bench and gone, right, okay, let's sort this out now.
But they do around this period anyway.
Yeah.
Like, they, so in between the two Namibia tries, which were under 4 minutes apart, right? Mm. They bring on Gerry Flannery, they bring on Simon Best, they bring on Neil Best.
Mm, yeah.
And then in the last two, with 2 minutes to go, they bring on both Paddy Wallace and Jordan Murphy.
Yes.
But they bring on most of their replacement forwards in between the two Namibian tries to go, like, okay, they've got momentum, we'll stem this here, we'll kill it. And it doesn't work.
Yeah. It's insane that that could have just changed the complexion of Namibian rugby, like, as we know it, because they would have that moment that they cling on to. Really, really interesting moment, that. I didn't realise that was the moment that you did that big involuntary noise.
What did you think
that
it was?
I thought it was Vitboy's run for that try.
Oh, no. No, it was the intercept attempt. Because up until then, it's like, oh, this is interesting. And there it was almost a moment in which the rugby
almost
was
an
swung.
Upset.
Morocco could have had that moment. And they might have it in 2023.
Yeah. They might do on future episodes of this series, to be fair.
They might. They might.
The rest of the games in this World Cup. But
I can't wait for Morocco to play France this year.
Yeah, that's going to be great, isn't it? Yeah, it's a wild pass, nearly intercepted. But alas, Ireland do get downfield. There are a couple of those moments that we said earlier didn't come. They start to come later on. Like, Easterby comes up with a brilliant turnover at one point in this half, just as Namibia start to pile more pressure on. Trimble kicks what would be now 50-22.
Yeah.
Which is super important. The fact
it's brilliant.
Played that
it's
so
a
maturely,
brilliant kick. Yeah.
Yeah, and not got carried away, because I think it's common for wingers to just think, right, okay, I'll just...
Very where's that come from moment from Andrew Trimble.
Yeah, huge momentum swing of that. Because
I remember Andrew Trimble saying once that when he's low on confidence or he's like having a bad day, he likes to go and watch his highlights on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's a moment he's watched back.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant by him. It's brilliant by him.
Like, but there's... All of these moments that come in the last 15 minutes come because Ireland know they're in a game.
Yeah.
And they're normally moments you pull when you're playing against South Africa or you're playing against, you know, that
France
game they won by
1 point
against,
you know,
Scotland.
Yeah.
And yeah. Like, it's those kind of moments where you're like, oh shit, we need to properly perform here and close this game out.
Yeah.
Like, O'Gara's kicking
right.
the corners, Stringer's
it's that
kind of playing
ego
fumble.
Thing of Trimble going, do I want a highlight reel moment where I break through and try and score? Or do I just want to sensibly put us in the right area of the park?
Well, so there's a, you know, Peter String was infamous for never going for the short side break himself.
Mm.
And hence that try in the Huntington final. Because everyone was like, well, he never does this, so we're safe to leave it undefended.
Yeah.
And he does it in this game. He has a crack.
Didn't notice that.
Yeah, he has a crack in the first 20 minutes. And he has a couple of cracks himself.
Ah.
Clearly learning from Vitboy.
Clearly.
Infectious. But you've got moments of Ireland kind of spend the first half and, like, they are kicking for the corner rather than going for the points and so on.
Yeah.
And all of that changed in the last 15 minutes. Mm. Like, they are threatened and scared and worried.
Yeah. Point as well, so Namibia kick it back to Ireland, it lands on the 10 metre line, Trimble catches it, and Murray Mexted proclaims, try time.
Yes. Yeah, brilliant.
It simply
Thanks.
Wasn't, he just crashed it up.
Brian O'Driscoll also puts in a couple of really good kicks, that I think, like, two kicks that I think are just really intelligent decisions to kick, like, from a game management point of view.
Yeah.
Sort of thing you see Lenny Kitau, Emily Scarrett doing nowadays,
yes.
like, really good at just identifying actually the best options to kick now.
I thought about both of those as I was watching Bod in this game. The adaptability from how he started it, and he was really kind of full of energy and charged.
Yeah.
Whereas then actually went, you know, no, I just know what to do. And every touch he made was quietly impactful.
Yeah.
You're right. There was a couple of times he stuck it in the corner. He runs the right lines at all times. You know, he knows when to stay perfectly square.
There's one where he... Actually, it's the one of these kicks where we mentioned Vitboy trying to step Trimble.
Yeah.
Like, that's from O'Driscoll sticking it through.
Yeah.
And Trimble smashed him to touch because he puts him in an impossible position. And clearly knows, this winger, I know he is literally Vitboy, but also he is just running chaotically every time he gets the ball.
He will run chaotically anywhere and that might be to the touch line.
Yeah. So I reckon Trimble can quite easily put him to touch.
Odds are pretty good here. Yeah.
Like, Andrew Trimble has quietly a very good game, I think.
Certainly does. But yeah, so... Bod gets another touch of the ball when they get into Namibian territory. And again, he is so square on this that he just frees a man outside him.
Well, so Vessels puts the ball out on the full. And
that's where it starts.
That's a big turning point, I think. Mm. And I don't think Namibia necessarily would have won this game here.
Sure.
But, you know, they were 10 points behind.
Could have had another opportunity to score.
Yeah. Like, they could have got a losing bonus point out of this, perhaps.
Sure, yeah.
But Vessels puts the ball out on the full from what could have been a really good kick if it wasn't.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ireland then take the territory. They end up with a scrum.
Yeah. As I say, Bod runs so perfectly square on this that he can just free Dempsey on his outside and give him another little run up near the touchline, kind of the 15-metre line, I suppose.
Yeah.
And once again, Bod just knows exactly where to go, comes round the corner, catches the ball squarely off his chest, runs perfectly straight, lifts up on his outside, and Joe Flannery has a walk-in. Or so it seems. On first viewing, it looks like he has a walk-in.
It's lovely. He's just double involved two phases in a row, same as his own try.
Yeah.
And both times, he just gives the perfect pass. Both of them, again, as I mentioned, at that moment, which you think, oh, he's going himself, it's Brian O'Driscoll going to do something, trying to do something magic. So they commit to him. Really crucial moment. As I say, when you look at this game, right? This game is really level, other than Ronan O'Gara and Brian O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
Ireland have two game-breaking players who are very different kinds of players, different kinds of game-breakers. And you think maybe, because they had the scrum anyway, maybe they would have seen it through if they had, like, you know, Fergus McFadden at 13 instead. But so much of it comes down to two tries Brian O'Driscoll creates, one from Ronan O'Gara.
Hmm.
And if you take those out, Morocco have just won the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Unbelievable touches by O'Driscoll.
Brilliant.
To set
absolutely
up that try
brilliant
for Flannery, who I would say finishes it well because the try is given.
Yes.
But
then they cut to the other angle. And suddenly it looks like he grounds the ball short of the line. Then it goes, then rolls over the line, at which point he's in touch.
Yeah.
And it's I don't really think that try would be given nowadays. I think the TMO would step in and say, actually, no, he's
that
in touch.
That said, though,
or held up
with the protocol of on-field decisions, I feel like it probably wouldn't be overturned.
I don't know.
Really difficult to
really
tell,
tricky
though.
One. Really tricky.
Tough one to be a referee.
I understand the referee going with his gut instinct. And
yes, exactly. So I think, therefore, it's the correct decision.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, fair play. Ireland really had to reach to get that one out of the bag, that try. But a Bod moment of brilliance is worth a lot.
Yes.
In these games where you've got a scare on your hands.
Unfortunately, like, that try comes in 76 minutes. For some reason, the referee keeps playing twice beyond the 80 minutes. But my one big note from the end is, give it to Vitboy. And Namibia do not do this.
No, they do not. Interestingly as well, Vessels does kick the ball out early.
Yes.
Before the 80 minutes across, he kicks the ball out.
But the thing is, it set the clocks at 80 minutes. The clock, you know, he was on like 81 minutes and he was like, so he kicks the ball out in his own 22.
I don't
sideways
blame him, but I'm still going to mention him in the dick of the day.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Of course. He's earned it.
Exactly. So the game comes to a close. Ireland win 32-17. Sigh of relief if you're an Irish fan.
Yes. I mean, Eddie O'Sullivan comes out afterwards and just says, yeah, we were shit.
Yeah.
Like, he says, I think that's the worst we played in a very long time.
Mm.
Like, lots of errors and fair play to Namibia. They, you know, got on top of us.
Yeah, brilliant performance by Namibia. I think I went into the first sort of 20 minutes of this and went, oh, this Namibia team are going to be like one of those 1987 teams where we just laugh at them the whole time and go like, oh my God, they're all so shit. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I went into the game thinking that for the first 20 minutes and I was so ready to take the piss out of them. But this is remembered, bizarrely, as Namibia's best ever Rugby World Cup performance.
It's one of them, certainly up there.
Like, I watched, so there's a thing
on the World
Total
Rugby,
that they did on it. And there's a really well, engagingly recounted story by one of the Namibian coaches where he talks about, oh, well, we were playing quite well. So the French crowd, they have this chant that goes, Allez les Bleus, because France play in blue. And at one point, Fun fact, we were playing in blue in that
what?
Game. What? And at one point, when we'd made a few breaks and scored some tries, they thought, you know what, we see Ireland win a lot, I would cheer for the underdog. And they started chanting, "Ale, ale, bleu, for Namibia."
That's genuinely very good. Fair play. Fair play yeah. to the French crowd.
Yeah.
Good on it. Well-told anecdote.
Yeah, it was a really well-told anecdote. Yeah. But yeah, and they said, like, this has gone down as one of the kind of great games in Namibian rugby World Cup history.
Yeah.
And you know what? Good on them. I think they interviewed Jacques Berger in that as well, and a couple of other Namibian players.
Of course they interviewed Jacques Berger. Jacques yeah. Berger was on Total Rugby every single week.
Yeah, he was.
They brought him out, and they were like, so what did Namibia think of the Six Nations this
thing
year?
The thing is, when I think of Total Rugby, and I'm not joking here, I genuinely think of a time they showed the highlights of Morocco. Yeah.
Yes.
I wish I'd paid more attention and cheered for them a little bit
I
harder.
Wish we'd known they were our favourite team ever.
I know. Real shame that. But yeah, brilliant performance by Namibia. And I think
yeah.
they deserve the glory for the 17 points they got.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And it's a shame they didn't finish close out. I wish Flannery's try had been disallowed so that the scoreboard could have shown what a...
Yeah, I know what you
reflected
mean.
Reflected the game a bit better.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Can't wait to see what they do in the rest of this tournament.
Yeah.
I think whatever they do, they've given a really good account for themselves in the first game. Whatever happens against France, you know, as long as they go out and try to score a couple of tries or whatever, I'd be really excited to see that
yeah.
and against Argentina. And the game against Georgia as well will presumably be close. I don't know. These all happened 16 years ago, but I've not seen them. So I can't wait to see these. So
absolutely.
I'm really, really excited to see more of Namibia.
So on that note, man of the match, dick of the day.
Yeah, where do you want to start?
As we're coming towards 2 hours on Ireland v Namibia. What a podcast. So we start man of the match.
Yes.
I think this is actually a really difficult one to choose.
Really difficult one. The obvious player I have written down is Brian O'Driscoll.
Yep.
Because I think the reason why Ireland win the game, as you said ultimately, is because of him and Rog.
Yeah.
But Brian O'Driscoll does score a try, and it has a direct involvement in sort of two or three others.
Yeah.
Which you can't ignore. I think Jacques Berger is brilliant. He has such a good game for Namibia.
Yeah.
And as I say, you can see why he goes on to become the player that he becomes. But my man of the match is Jacques Nivenhuis.
Yeah, yeah.
He was absolutely everywhere. Deserved his try. Made an unbelievable amount of tackles, carries. I think everything he did was impactful. So
yes.
pound for pound, I would say he's the best player on the field.
It's hard to argue with that. It's hard to argue with anything you've said there. I think that, yeah, as you say, Brian O'Driscoll was in the first half, at halftime, I thought, well, he just nailed on Brian O'Driscoll.
Mm.
And then the game changes massively.
Yes, I was
and that
exactly
kind of last
the same.
10 minutes of half of the first half and the second half changes enormously. Brian O'Driscoll is absolutely brilliant. I think Donal O'Callaghan has a quietly really good game.
Agreed. He always does.
Yeah. Always, like, flew under the radar a bit because he had O'Connell next to him.
He's always at least, like, the one below your Man of the Match nominations. Like,
yeah.
The tier below that.
So, yeah, I thought he was excellent and was kind of in contention for me. I think, ultimately, the Irish scrum helps them get on top.
It's true.
So I think you've got to mention John Hayes.
Yeah.
And Marcus Horne has a shit game around the park, so you kind of leave him out of it.
Yeah.
But, you know what? Fair enough.
Hayes is a good shout, though. Even though he gets skimmed by
Vittler. But I think, you come to that Namibia team. You come to... We mentioned him as a joke, but Vitboy is excellent.
He's great.
Like, yes, he became, you know, he kind of became like a meme almost.
First time
talking,
we saw Superboot, we both gave him man of the match.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And the thing about Vitboy is genuinely he has a cutting edge to that Namibia team that I don't think I'm expecting to face.
Yeah,
a player
yeah.
who is that
but
level of dangerous.
It, though, because he does so much stupid shit the first few times he gets the ball that when he does get it in space, he does something incredible.
Yeah.
Because they don't see it coming. He catches them off guard.
And, like, for a player that never played professional rugby, like, he's excellent.
It's
I'm
great.
Surprised no one went, that's a potential game breaker there.
Yeah.
Just from the few breaks he makes.
Yeah.
So he's really in contention for me, and I'm very tempted to give it to him.
Yeah.
But
I'm
I think,
not blame you.
Honestly, for me, it's between Brian O'Driscoll, but I think I'm going to agree on Jacques Nivenhuis.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree. Yeah, like, he's I think
excellent.
He's everywhere.
One of the games of his life.
Yeah.
Considering the opposition, and not only that, but the opposite back row he was against, like, punching above his weight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Brilliant. And dick of the day.
Well, I've got a few written down here. I mean, one of them is Vitboy for that incredible goose step attempt, which went hilariously for him. One of them is Vessels for kicking the ball out early.
Yes.
Has to be mentioned.
He was loading for the next game already. He was trying to get it done.
I did have written down Dennis Hickey, but I feel like in light of what you were saying earlier about probably being concussed, no. And Ron Nogara as well for his dropout attempt is hilarious.
Yes, of course.
But dick of the day, it can't be anyone but Murray Mekstead.
Yep. We're unanimously agreed here.
Yeah.
I decided it was Murray Mekstead really early on, and I have stuck with it completely. The other commentator for telling that fish and chip anecdote, yeah. John Taylor, thank you, for telling that anecdote about getting stuck eating fish and chips was very, very boring, along with him saying the thing about the Irish scrum being shit when they were dominating them, and for talking over the Nubian anthem. I'm talking myself into giving it to him, but no, Murray Mechstead for generally being ignorant and lazy and a bit of a bell end.
While we're here, by the way, before we go, it is written on the Wikipedia page for this game that Vitboy was the official man of the match.
Yes!
So he still gets a vote out of this, so that's still mate. Important.
Vitboy.
The official man of the match. The greatest. Clearly left a mark during this game.
The greatest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that brings us through with that unanimous Murray Mechstead, Jacques Nivenhouse, loving or hating, to the end of yet another rugby. Do you like rugby anymore?
I'm a little bit older than when we started this pod, but I would say that I'm on my way to liking rugby.
Oh, that's excellent. That's what we want to hear. Would you like some more rugby?
Yeah. I'd love some more
curse,
rugby. Yeah.
Another course of rugby. Or curse of rugby, actually.
I'd like an education.
You'd love an education. Like so, firstly, I'm going to, play the Namibian anthem when we finish. And then I'm going to let you next week join us again to watch the rugby match, Argentina versus Georgia from 2007.
Sounds like a good one.
Argentina back after their big win dramatically. Georgia playing their first game of the tournament. It's a very exciting one. And we'll see you next week for that. Forget the Six Nations are starting soon. No one gives a shit.
This promises to be better.
This is more interesting. This is more interesting. Come back for Georgia v Argentina.
Don't watch rugby. Listen to people talk about rugby from 16 years ago.
Yeah, like Georgia, Georgia should be in the Six Nations.
Yeah.
Because corruption. Yes. And so therefore, listen to Argentina, who also should be in the Six Nations, and it should still be six. We'll see you then. Until...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That time, have rugby.
Vids, boy!